Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, I really shouldn't do that. I really shouldn't try and do articles right at the last minute. I mean, it was during the opening theme, if you heard a little blip there, it was because I found yet another article, and this is on the stupidity and absurdity of the F-35 program, whatever it's called. I don't know, the Lightning II or something like that. You know, they try and give it a fast name to make it appear, you know, more lethal than it is, but it's everything that's wrong with the military. So we've got an interesting program today. It's one of those unpredictable ones. I haven't heard from John Cullen, even though I know he's reliable as anybody I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he's amazing. And so he should be here with us in the next hour at 9 o'clock. I started an hour late today because I was talking to Josie last night, and Josie's here in the Milton, Pensacola area also. And she was talking to Dr. Stella Emanuel and I think one of her assistants. And so Dr. Emanuel was in town. I was speaking at a church. She's also a minister as well as a doctor, which is really cool. Anyway, so I'm just looking at my text messages now as I'm talking, hoping I don't say anything really stupid. You know, I should put the call-in number here. Hang on, let me just do that too. So let's go call-in number, call. And this is live radio, I know, but, you know, this is how it works. We're pretty casual around here. Call-in number, and you guys can get it to 215. Let's go again, 383-3832. Does anybody else see that... your fingers are too big for the phones, and I get a bigger phone, but my fingers are still too big for this phone. Call in number 215-383-3832. Okay, so let's put that in there too. There we go. So if all works out, we should have Dr. Stella Emanuel. I mean, she's one of the heroes of COVID. She's one of the early folks at America's Frontline Doctors, and she was the one prescribing hydroxychloroquine, you know, back in the winter of 2020, you know. And I heard about her very early on, heard about Dr. Simone Gold very early on, heard about Dr. Zelenko very early, and Dr. Raoult in France, in Marseille, who did the first study on why hydroxychloroquine, you know, cures COVID, even though doctors aren't supposed to say cure. They're supposed to say treats effectively. They shouldn't be saying safe and effective on the vaccines for a couple of reasons. One, they're not vaccines, and two, they're not safe or effective. I don't know how you call something safe, which is killing the amount of people and crippling the amount of people it is, and effective when it wears off after 2 months. You know, if it were effective, you wouldn't need a second shot and two boosters. That's, to me, that's not effective. Okay, that's propaganda. Anyway, so we've got John Cullen, data expert. He's the map daddy. He's given himself a new title. Like me, I'm the nerd warrior. John Cullen is the map daddy, and he's the one that created the Johns Hopkins COVID map. And they screwed around with it, and they made everything red. nobody's dead in certain countries yet. They're red on the COVID map. Well, how did that happen? So he got a little curious, right? So Dr. Emanuel, I've been trying to get her on for 2 years. I wrote her a couple of years ago, tried emailing, contacting, texting, phoning, no luck. Anyway, same thing with Dr. Simone Gold. So they're obviously swamped with people, and they're probably suspicious, which I would be, you know, of the different folks that are trying to get them on the air and try and ambush them, trick them, but not on this show. What I really want to talk to her about are two of our bills, vaccine product liability and ending big tech censorship, both of which have crippled all the honest doctors out there, the ones that are not only prescribing ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, azithromycin, the Zelenko protocol, plus other variations of their own that they find work best. You know, that information is being censored. So not only is the public health Nazis in Washington, headed by Dr. Fascist, telling doctors, you know, around the country and around the world, basically, you know, to follow our program, which will kill people, and don't use your own program. They silence them and ban them. They're working with big tech to make sure that they get banned when they do tell people things that will cure them. And this is the strange world we live in. You know, this is the world that we never thought would happen. We always thought it happened to other people in other countries. And it's like, no, it can happen here too. You know, I knew that when I was a kid, when I first got to the United States. I said, first thing I noticed was, A, the place was big. I mean, really big. Because I landed in a boat in New York. Well, actually, it was a ship. So I landed in a ship in New York. I thought, this is big. And this is just one city. Wow, New York. This is a big country. Okay. And then the next thing I noticed was the government was big. Because I happen to live in Massachusetts near a huge Air Force base, massive runways. And I was taking flying lessons when I was a kid. And those runways were so big, we could have taken off on the width. Oh, maybe a slight angle. That's how big they were. They're made for B-52s and C-5s, C-5 Lockheed Galaxies. And so I lived in this massive Air Force base. And there was a war going on. I mean, Vietnam was going on when I got to the United States. And so it was quite fascinating to see just how big the country and just how big the government and just how big the Air Force was. I'm like, whoa, didn't have that in Australia. We didn't have bombers that big. You know, I don't think we even had bombers in Australia. You know, I mean, I don't think even in World War II they had bombers. Well, two engine ones. You know, but nothing major. So that's the first thing you learn about the United States is, A, the country is big, and also the government is even bigger. That's where you are now. The federal government's the largest employer, and we need to change that. So that's our program today. I've got I want to talk about some military stuff in the first hour. Second hour, John Cullen with the global pandemic update. And the third hour, if all goes well, Dr. Stella Emanuel from America's Frontline Doctors. All right, so let's get started with this article I found. And there's a couple of people that I want to try and get on the show again. They've been on before, and that would be Joshua Whitehouse and Colonel Douglas McGregor. And Colonel McGregor, you see on Fox News all the time. Josh Whitehouse, you don't. He was a liaison from the Trump administration to the Defense Department, and his job was to drain the Pentagon swamp. And fascinating person. He's been on the show. That was one of our more popular shows when Josh was on, so I want to try and get him back. In fact, I want to get both these people back. So they wrote an article in the American Conservative that was titled, titled, America's Four-Star Problem. And what they're talking about is four-star generals. So if I know my military hierarchy, and of course they can come on and correct me, first star is brigadier general, second star is lieutenant general. I've forgotten what the third star is and the fourth star. What's the fourth star? I think third is probably major general, and fourth would be, I don't know, general? where do you go from there? Anyway, four stars are the problem. So when you get that high, it's just like Milley, who's probably the worst person. I bet you I can find a second lieutenant with more leadership ability. I said, you know who'd be better in that job? The guy that's leaving the Coast Guard because they insist that he get an experimental COVID jab and ruin his health when this guy's probably the healthiest guy I've ever seen. Jake, what's his name? You see this guy yesterday? It was on Fox News. He was on with Tucker. I think it was Tucker. Guy's got like this neck that's, you know, it sort of extends from his head. I mean, this guy's like a rock. You know, he could be a linebacker, you know, and he's Coast Guard rescue swimmer. And you're going to give this guy, do you think this guy's worried about COVID? I mean, his chances of getting COVID, or he's probably already had COVID, but his chances of having COVID do anything to him, you know, he's young and extremely healthy and probably works out like 6 hours a day, you know, so he can be a rescue swimmer. But COVID is not his problem. The jab is his problem, and he knows it. He's not stupid. You know, and so he's smart enough to know that he's healthy enough that he doesn't need a COVID shot. Like I say, he probably already had COVID. And the problem with COVID is nobody ever tests for immunity. This is how I knew the jab was bad. I knew it was bad because they weren't testing for immunity. So the first thing that doctors should do is see what you don't need. Okay, well, you don't need antibiotic. You don't have a bacterial infection. You don't need, you know, this because you don't have a viral infection. You do need this because, you know, you've got, you know, iron deficiency or whatever it is. So they have to find out what you don't need. But medicine doesn't work that way. They give you the COVID shot regardless of whether you need it or not because it makes money for Big Pharma, and then Big Pharma kicks it back to the health Nazis and Dr. Fascist, you know, in Washington and the state legislature, state public health departments, you know, through the CMS, and then the hospitals get their kickback from the Center for Medicaid Services in the fund of the rebates and the funding. And so we've got this really weird national health it's like a mandatory holocaust. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. It's a mandatory medical holocaust. You will do these things, and they will kill you. it's unbelievable what's going on around here. Anyway, so we've got another problem. We've got a problem with our military, and I knew we had a problem. You know, I've studied military history. I was a student of World War II at the age of 10. You know, I was in Australia, you know, and in Australia, don't forget, Australia was attacked by the Japanese. The Japanese were in northern Australia. They were in Port Moresby and Darwin. And so Australia had a very real chance of being invaded. So this isn't something they take lightly. The closest we came to being invaded was the terrorist attack in 9/11. We weren't invaded, but we were certainly attacked. And, of course, the attack before that was Pearl Harbor, and before that, I think, the War of 1812, in terms of actually attacking the United States. We lost, I think, World War I were the ships, and I don't think World War II, other than Pearl Harbor, and up in the Aleutian Islands. And I think two gunshots in Oregon from a Japanese sub. I think that's about it in terms of actual attacks on the United States. So we're not used to it. And so ever since World War II, once we won World War II, the military changed, we changed, we became this, you know, the United States thought of itself as an empire, and then the permanent war class took over. And so after World War II, you had the United Nations, which is 1945. They negotiated that in San Francisco, the Bretton Woods Conference, I think it was called. Anyway, so we got the UN. So we got the United Nations, which was the second iteration of the League of Nations, which was under Woodrow Wilson, you know, our very racist prime minister who got us into World War I, promising not to do it. And it was a Democrat. And then we had the blatantly socialist communist Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who got us into World War II, also a Democrat. And although he fought well once he got us in there, you know, the problem was he got us in there in the first place. I still believe that we knew about Pearl Harbor. We could have easily stopped the Japanese fleet before they got to Pearl Harbor and sunk them, you know, or at least blockaded them or done something. And even if they had attacked Pearl Harbor, that fleet could have been destroyed, and that would have been it. You know, it's okay, you attacked us, we destroyed your fleet. But the idea of going to war, I mean, everybody's like so willing to go to war. And the second place we could have stopped World War II was Admiral King. Admiral King had a plan to cut the Japanese supply lines in the middle of the Pacific. MacArthur wanted to do island invasions and retake the Philippines at the cost of millions of lives. You know, mostly local folks, you know, the Okinawans, the folks that lived on Iwo Jima. The people in the Solomon Islands, Guadalcanal, the Philippines, horrible things happened. So, but the real genius of World War II in the Pacific was Nimitz, first of all. But secondly, Admiral King. Admiral King had a plan to cut the supply lines. So if you cut the supply lines, you cut off the bottom half of the entire Japanese forces. You isolate them, and they can't do anything. So then from the middle, you attack outwards. So you've completely flanked. So the bottom supply lines, they're going to run out of supplies. They're going to run out of food. They're going to run out of ammunition. They can't do anything. So then they become neutral as a force. So then you concentrate on Japan. You can probably blockade Japan and ruin their industry and their will to fight, and you take away their ability to fight. But this island hopping campaign never made any sense to me. It was just brutal fighting. You ever see Hacksaw Ridge, the film about Private Doss, the conscientious objector who saved like 75 lives by lowering him down this huge ridge in World War II in this battle for Okinawa? What were we doing in Okinawa? You know. Anyway, so we got a problem. And you look at the visionaries of our military. Well, let me get back to this real quickly. So after World War II, we had the United Nations in 1945. We had Korea was separated, I think, 1947. War started there in 1950, a ceasefire in 1953, and it's never been officially solved. So 1954, Vietnam is split in half, and then, of course, in the early 1960s, you know, we start escalating there. The French had it with French Indochina. You know, and they lost, and they got kicked out. And so then, of course, we go in. And then you had all mess there, and we know about Vietnam. Vietnam should have said, okay, we need to stop doing this. We need to stop this nation building. We need to stop reinforcing corrupt governments. We need to stay out of things that aren't our business. You know, do horrible things happen in the world? Yes. But is it our job to solve them and pay for them and fund billions upon billions of dollars and try and, you know, cause victory that's impossible? No. And, of course, the latest one is Ukraine. We have no business in Ukraine. I was talking to Captain Tom Stewart yesterday. Great show, last hour of the show. And we're talking about Ukraine. What should have happened, if anybody had a brain in their head, was that NATO should not have any membership in any Eastern European country and shouldn't be in Norway, Sweden, and Finland either. You know, NATO should be the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the victors in World War II, Western Europeans, France, Germany, Spain, Portugal, England, Scotland, Ireland, you know, Italy, Greece, the Western European nation. That's it. That's it. The whole point of NATO was to be a wall against the Warsaw Pact, which is what Russia had as their buffer zone so that Germany wouldn't attack, you know, wouldn't through Eastern Europe and attack Russia again. That's the whole idea of the Warsaw Pact. So the Cold War, strangely enough, worked because the Russians had the Warsaw Pact. That was their buffer zone. You know, Western Europe had NATO. That was their safety zone. And we were on the other side of the Atlantic. Okay. Stalemated. We didn't have a war during the Cold War because it stalemated. You know, it was a balance of power, and everybody realized that there was no reason to do anything. And then, of course, it started destabilizing when NATO decided they wanted all of Europe, which was stupid. Well, Putin doesn't want that. He doesn't want nuclear weapons on his border any more than we wanted weapons in Cuba. So it was a stupid policy. It never should have happened. You know, the U.S. basically under Brandon, the insurrectionist, an illegal president, caused an illegal war. And this is where we are. What should have happened was if there was a dispute between Ukraine and Russia, then the other European nations of Eastern Europe, the ones who were subjugated and basically enslaved by the former Soviet Union, should have banded with Ukraine and they should have solved it. So this should have been an Eastern European and a Russian contained problem. We should have had nothing to do with it because we shouldn't be in NATO anyway. But we are because we have this permanent war class. And the permanent war class always has to be at war somewhere. And this was headed by, Bush the Elder, who got us in Iraq 1, Bush the Younger, who wanted to impress Daddy, so he got us in Iraq 2, and I'm not sure who, it was Clinton or somebody. I don't know when we got into Afghanistan, but I think it was a Clinton, Bush, and Obama, permanent war, class war. They're all globalists, right? So they keep us at war somewhere. And, of course, once we surrendered, well, Brandon surrendered illegally in Afghanistan, the illegal president surrendered illegally. Obama had them give all our weapons to the Taliban so they could build their nation that way, him being a Muslim supporter and probably Muslim himself, I would think, due to his heritage of his father. That's how Islam is passed down through the families from the father to the son, et cetera, et cetera. So we know how that works. He's never renounced it. So, I imagine that's what's going on, which makes sense why Obama would donate $85 billion worth of our arms through Brandon to the Taliban. That makes sense. And that's his foreign policy. And his foreign policy is anti-American. He's a globalist. Okay. So that's how that works. So now the permanent war class has to have a war somewhere. So they send us to Ukraine and they spend billions of dollars. And it's like Afghanistan all over again. It's not our problem. We shouldn't have been in Iraq. We shouldn't have been in Afghanistan. We shouldn't have been in Ukraine. These aren't our problems. We have no problems here. We could have put all the power lines in Florida underground, before Hurricane Ian, and we wouldn't have power losses right now. We could have done amazing things with our infrastructure. We could have given everybody hydroxychloroquine, which is what Peter Navarro wanted to do, and there wouldn't have been a pandemic. There would have been no lockdowns, no school closures, no job losses, no businesses closed, no families losing their fortune, and related to COVID, no suicides, addictions, depressions, assaults, family, domestic violence, et cetera, et cetera. Because there would have been no pandemic. In fact, there never really was. It was never that deadly to begin with. It's a flu bug, and John Cohen talks about that. So then I got this article from American Conservative, and this was from September 29th, 2022. So we're talking about, I think, about 2 weeks ago now. And it really documents the problems with our military. And so I want to go through this as we need to talk about this more. But you can see how this directly relates to what's going on in Ukraine. So American Conservatives, September 29th, Douglas McGregor, Joshua Whitehouse. Reflecting on the Battle of the Bulge during December 1944 and January 1945, Troy Middleton, former 8th Corps commander, said Patton's principal worth was that he kept things moving. He kept everybody else moving, not only his juniors, but his seniors. Otherwise, during the Battle of the Bulge, there would have been a tendency to play Montgomery, to dress up the lines instead of getting in there and hitting the Germans hard. And so let me explain that in regular English. So 8th Corps, that's probably the 8th Army. And so what Patton did, Patton came up through southern Europe. He came through Italy. You remember, you see the movie Patton, Messina, and then Sicily, and then to the bottom of Italy. And that's how Patton was driving north. And that's how Patton got into Germany. And then I'm not exactly sure what happened. Then he was relieved of command for a while, and then he comes back through D-Day, northern France. Anyway, so Patton, made things move. Patton was a rebel. Patton was, an instigator. Patton was one of those people that you need during a war, but is absolutely useless during peacetime because they don't want him. They don't want his ideas. They don't want him messing up the system. Montgomery is much more proof. General Brigadier, no, was it Brigadier, no, what was his name? Field Marshal. Actually, he's a Field Marshal. That's above a general, right? So Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery was much more into taking some ground, holding it, making it all nice and pretty, making sure everybody's, regulated and caught up and their uniforms are good. And then he'd go take another piece. But it was too slow for Patton. That's how Patton beat him to Messina in Sicily, because he moved and he kept everybody moving. And you keep the enemy on the run. You don't give him a chance to settle. You don't fight, wait, fight, wait. I mean, Sun Tzu would be appalled by that kind of a strategy. Yet that was Montgomery because, the British, unfortunately, favor their equipment more than people. The American tradition in the military is to favor people more than equipment. Obviously, look at what happened with the Taliban. Anyway, so that's what happened. So Patton was very American style general and did what he did, ran fast and hard and beat the enemy quick. That's the way you're supposed to do it. Anyway, the article goes on. Middleton's observations are sound, but in 1939, the Army's senior leaders had already selected the unpopular and irascible, I like that word because it sort of reminds me of me, the irascible Patton for retirement and obscurity. So they already wanted to get rid of him. Before the war, they wanted to get rid of him. And this is pretty common. It's like Billy Mitchell, which we'll talk about further down in the article. Billy Mitchell was court-martialed for being insubordinate. And yet he warned that the Japanese would attack Pearl Harbor on a Sunday at dawn, from the north. Okay. And he did this in like 1923. He said, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen in the Pacific. And you're an idiot. Yeah, it's never going to happen. Shut up. Go away. Court-martial him, insubordinate. We policymakers, or the what they call now the PowerPoint Rangers, know better. All right. Next paragraph says, Middleton's observations are sound, but in 1939, the Army senior leaders had already selected Patton for retirement and obscurity. I already read that. Patton was not the only one. And this is where I also got these other folks. In the 1920s, the Army's senior leaders sidelined Colonel Billy Mitchell and Brigadier General Adna Chafee. Now, I'm not familiar with Adna Chafee. I was after this morning because I looked him up. Anyway, it says Mitchell wanted to develop air power. Chafee wanted to build the armored force. Thanks to the outbreaks of wars in Poland and Western Europe, the idea survived and Patton survived, but only barely in time to be used in World War II. Of course, the real scandal with Patton was the fact that he was killed in a very mysterious car accident right after World War II. Why? Well, those of us of the suspicious nature think that he was killed because he wanted to go into war with Russia right then. He said, we've got the army. We need to get the Russians back to Russia. We need to free Eastern Europe. And he was right, you know, because the Russians didn't take the territory deliberately. See, we, you know, the Allies, you know, England, France, and the United States took Western Europe to free those countries. Well, Russia didn't take them to free them. I mean, they were going to for Germany. To basically punish Germany horribly for what they did to Russia. I mean, I understand that. But in the process, they went through Eastern Europe, not to liberate those countries, but to take them, take over them, and make them communists. So this is where you get these competing ideologies of freedom versus Marxism. And so that was the big deal. So Patton said, wait a minute, we're already here. You know, they're already weakened. You know, they've already been through war with Germany. They've lost millions and millions of people. Let's kick their ass back to Russia. Patton was right. But mysteriously, he died in a car accident right after World War II. Really? That was strange. Okay, so that's how these things go. Back to the article. Today, the potential for high-intensity conventional warfare between great powers looms large. The next president and his administration must recognize that high-intensity conventional warfare demands much more character and competence than they will find in another cohort of 3- and 4-star yes-men with brush cuts and bright eyes wearing the uniform from the distant past minus its gold buttons. Okay, so that's it. Generals always fight the last war. That's the theory. You know, that's why the generals in World War I wanted cavalry charges on horseback. Really? Into tanks, machine guns, and barbed wire? That was smart. And it didn't work the first several times, so they tried it again. We just need more men. It'll work. It's always worked. No, it doesn't. Cavalry charges or men running in the fields yelling and screaming with bayonets do not win against barbed wire and machine guns. That's insanity to think otherwise. You know, is crazy and should relieve you of duty immediately, but it didn't because the World War One generals were the aristocrats. They were the aristocrat class. They were like the barons of old, the landlords. You know, in the feudal times, they were the nobles and the lords. Okay, so the generals in World War One were of the aristocracy. See, American generals are much more of the people, and that's why we had better generals than a lot of these things. But even so, they still tolerated bayonet charges. You know, into you know, Pershing. I'm not sure. Pershing was actually really good in World War One. Pershing was our general who commanded the American forces because the British insisted that the Americans be under British control and British officers. And Pershing's like, no, I don't think so. We're not going to waste our men like you're wasting your men, you know, having them run into barbed wire, you know, with bayonets and having them machine gun. Oh, the Germans did it too. I mean, they ran into the British barbed wire and were machine gunned because the generals on the German side weren't much brighter than the generals on the British side or the French side. They're all insane because they didn't value people. You know, they were the aristocrats and the people were just servants, so it didn't matter how many died. Very interesting philosophy. And yet we're supposed to go there and fight more wars? I don't think so. I don't like the European philosophy, the class structure, the whole idea of, you know, who gets to fight and who doesn't. That's not how a country should be run, right? Now, I love Europe. Don't get me wrong. I just don't like their war philosophy. And we should have nothing to do with it. And that includes Eastern Europe. We should have nothing to do with Ukraine. Ukraine is the Democrats' money laundering bank. I mean, why is Ukraine always showing up? Why did it show up in impeachment? Why did it show up with Burisma and Hunter Biden? Why is Ukraine always showing up? The fact that this country keeps showing up, and most people don't even know where it is, should tell you something. You know, we don't need to be associated with a country that the Democrats and probably the Republicans too are using as a money laundering bank. I mean, the foreign aid goes there, and then we don't know where it goes. Well, it probably comes back in the pockets of our politicians. That's why they didn't like Trump. Trump would have never put up with this. You notice there was no attack in Ukraine when Trump was in office. Why? Because Trump would have had a negotiated peace. He would have got Luchensky, I can never remember his name, the president of Ukraine, and Putin sat him down and said, look, you two idiots, what do you want? And Putin would have put forward his 6 points, and what's his name would have put forward his proposals, and they may not have settled, but the war would have been a lot smaller because we wouldn't have been involved. Back to the article. Zelensky is here, adding more money to an already bloated defense budget will also not fix the problem. still finding new senior officers who are focused more on service than promotion, senior military leaders with minds receptive to fundamental change in warfare is easier said than done. To understand why change must be imposed from above, Alfred G. Meyer developed a typology of leadership that explains the progressive evolution of leaders in large military, political, or industrial establishment from creative revolutionaries, that would be us at Action Radio, to plodding bureaucrats, that would be, you know, regular radio, you know, that maintain the institution. And actually, this is, I didn't think about this until just now, but this is a really good illustration of the problem with radio. The problem with radio, Fred Jacobs, who is a Hall of Fame media consultant, and I've actually been in contact with him a few times. He's watching what we're doing at Action Radio. He's one of these media gurus. He created the classic rock format. He's a real smart guy. And I've had contact with him a little bit. And again, you know, we keep doing what we're doing. He keeps watching. So there's a lot of folks that are watching us. One of them is Fred Jacobs. And he wrote an article way back when saying what radio needs, you know, is a brainstorm of new ideas. And I wrote him back. I said, Mr. Jacobs, sir, it's already been done. And that's when I told him about Action Radio, and that's when he started watching us. You know, but we've been suppressed so much, we haven't been able to do a lot. But you look at radio. Not only are we suppressed here at Action Radio by big tech, we're suppressed at Action Radio by radio. You know, I was fired from a job for doing Action Radio. I was fired for having basically new ideas and not following an ancient archaic format that doesn't work anymore. Okay, so I'm the creative revolutionary. Anybody associated with the show is a creative revolutionary. Anybody who's written a bill is a creative revolutionary by this definition. And we're up against plotting bureaucrats. And the plotting bureaucrats are iHeart, Cumulus, you know, maybe even Sirius XM, the satellite radio, Salem, any of these plotting bureaucrats that don't carry our show. Why don't they carry our show? Well, because we're creative revolutionaries. We go against the system. We're the Pattons. We're the Billy Mitchells. We're the DeLorean, although he didn't come out too well. But at least he created a new car. You know, we're the entrepreneurs. We're the Wozniak and Jobs of radio, creating an entirely new kind of radio. Although it's not we're not doing the mechanical thing. We're doing a service thing. But the point is, we're the revolutionaries. And what does radio do with revolutionaries? It suppresses them. You know, have you seen iHeart or Cumulus or Salem or any of these folks knocking down my door, even though I've talked to them over years? And I sent hundreds upon hundreds of applications to their radio stations to get a job telling them about Action Radio. You know the response I got? No. From all of them, except one. One person in the country said, yes, this is an interesting idea. Let's try it. And that was Mike Bates, my boss at WEBY 1330 AM, Northwest Florida's news and talk leader. One of the last great, truly independent radio stations in the country, until it was bought out by folks I won't mention, who then fired me, you know, for doing Action Radio. You know, and they wanted the old format. I said, well, that's not my job description. You know, I came here to do Action Radio. That's it. That's the deal. You know, so they fired me. Okay, creative revolutionary. You know, Billy Mitchell was court-martialed. You know, Galileo was, I think, burned at the stake, or maybe he wasn't. I mean, he was excommunicated. But, you know, if your ideas are controversial enough, they kill you, depending on the society. Look at the Inquisition. All right? So in the United States, we don't do that. We don't kill you for your ideas, at least I hope not. But they certainly kill your ability to do anything about it. I mean, that's what big tech is for. Big tech is there to stop new ideas, you know, on behalf of government. It's pure fascism. All right? So you have a fascist government dictating through big tech to control information. So the only information people get is that remdesivir and ventilators cure COVID, in which case you die. We call the remdesivir ventilator death march. And I'll be talking about that with Dr. Emanuel when she comes on. Back to the article. Okay, I read that. That was a good paragraph. So then we talk about Alfred G. Meyer's typology of leadership. He's got three of them here. And you look at this in terms of the military. It's really quite fascinating. Revolutionaries, 1918 to 1932. So that'll be post-World War I to about, well, 1942 is when we got into World War II. I mean, December 7th, 1941 was almost the end of 1941. So basically, we got in World War II in 1942, whereas the Japanese attacked China, I think, in 1937. Germany attacked Poland in 1939. So we were, you know, 3 years late. So we got in it late and kicked ass. We really did. But we didn't have to get in at all, really. You know, we could have done lend-lease to Europe. And Russia was kicking the butt of Germany. And Russia had, you know, five times more troops than all the allies, including us combined. That's where the war was. The war was on the Eastern Front. Because Hitler was stupid. He attacked Russia. He could have taken Western Europe and kept it. But he didn't, because he's an egomaniac. And these things happen. Well, you had two leftist bullies. You know, you had one leftist Stalin versus another leftist Hitler. That's where the war was. Then he had an emperor, you know, a megalomaniac emperor in Japan in Hirohito and Tojo, you know, the military dictator running the country, and then, of course, they ran Japan into the ground. You know, whereas they could have negotiated trade deals, got their resources, and been fine, but no, they had to have war and take it. Didn't work. Anyway, so the revolutionaries, the people that created the military that won World War II, are the ones that came out of World War I and went, this is interesting. Let's do something different. So the typology of leadership says revolutionaries, 1918 to 1942, the revolutionaries create the system. In the absence of conflict or crisis, they are usually neutered and their influence suppressed, but their concepts and ideas triumph when war threatens. That would be Colonel Doug McGregor, who should be General Doug McGregor. But he's not, because he's a revolutionary. He has good ideas. And he co-wrote this article with Josh Whitehouse. So the two of them are revolutionaries. That's where I put them. Again, Action Radio, we are revolutionaries. Anybody that creates a new business or a service or Elon Musk is a revolutionary. Okay. Richard Branson, revolutionary. They're also visionary and they're also entrepreneurs. But whether it's a military or business, revolutionaries are revolutionaries. Well, that's just how it goes. And everybody hates you. That's the first thing you have to accept. If you're going to be a revolutionary, just you got to know that the world hates you. They don't want innovation. They don't want to have their natural order shattered. They can't do it. Anyway, so the next category is system builders. And the system builders, 1942 to 1991, is what the article says. The system builders translate the creative visions of the revolutionaries into practice. Well, wait a minute. Does that mean I'm both a system builder and a revolutionary? I think so. I'm creating the system. So I guess I am a system builder. This is kind of cool. All right, so I guess I'm a crossover. I'm a revolutionary system builder. There we go. So 1942 to 1991, the system builders translate the creative visions of the revolutionaries into practice. They recognize how wrong-footed the armed forces are and make profound changes in structure, equipment, organization, and most important, thinking. Thinking. Okay? So the real revolutionary in World War II was Admiral King, who would have stopped the war with Japan, you know, years earlier. Oh, no, we had to have MacArthur. We have to go island hopping. Point, you know, island by island by island by island, stair-step your way all across the Pacific for the deaths of millions of people, all because MacArthur has an ego. That's really what it came down to. Huh. Also, it's system builder. Let me think. Trump's a system builder, okay? I don't know if – I mean, he's not necessarily revolutionary. He's just, you know, very patriotic. In fact, I think if he were revolutionary, he would have handled COVID completely differently. So I put Trump in the system builder category. He just happens to be a very good system builder, and he happens to attract visionary people to him. Peter Navarro, I put in the revolutionary class. Steve Bannon would be in the revolutionary class. These are the kind of revolutionaries that think beyond. Okay, and then we get to the worst category, where we are now. System maintainers, 1991 to the present. So that would be from Bill Clinton on. So that would be the globalist presidents on, except for the aberration of Trump, which they couldn't stand. So they put a globalist back in the White House to pretend he's president. And that would be one Joe Biden. System maintainers. System maintainers succeed the system builders and become the ardent defenders of the system they inherited. See, system maintainers don't create anything. They maintain the status quo to the point of absurdity. It says today's 3 and 4 stars, those are generals, today's 3 and 4 star generals basically constitute the latest generation of system maintainers. They are satiated, convinced the system works perfectly because it rewarded them with promotion. So that's why they think it works. They think it works because it worked for them. Okay. Can anybody say that Afghanistan worked? 20 years of war, and then we end up surrendering and giving our weapons to the enemy. Well, that didn't work. Iraq. Can anybody say that Iraq worked? All the people that died and all the people that sacrificed their limbs and were crippled and all the traumatic brain injuries and the PTSD and the suicides. We lose 3 people, you know, into suicide to every 1 person that dies in combat. I heard that staggering statistic the other day. Okay. So is that what you call a successful system? I don't think so. Okay. Was Iraq a success? No, because there was never a war to win. Oh, what? Stopping Kuwait from drilling into Iraqi oil fields? That's not our problem. You know, don't buy Iraqi oil. You know, oil embargo, blockade, you know, and then the Arab countries. If Iraq was that big a problem, Saudi Arabia and the other countries would have dealt with them. But they didn't. Why? They expected us to do it. Who dealt with Iraq? Iran did. In fact, they went to war. In fact, Henry Kissinger had the best line of the war. He says, it's too bad we can only have one loser. Because as long as Iraq and Iran were fighting each other, they weren't causing trouble anywhere else. The problem is all the innocent people that died because they're all conscripted. And that's how these things work. So the leaders that cause the wars don't fight the wars. They draft millions of other people and make them fight the wars. Otherwise, they get shot. So you die either way. Some country. Back to system maintainers. Anyway, so it says, for the current generation of system maintainers, this is back to the article, a fundamentally new military system with new organizations for a new kind of war is not only inconceivable, the idea is offensive. And therein lies the problem. Let me say that again. For the current generation of system maintainers, that's the current general staff of the military, a fundamentally new military system with new organizations for a new kind of war is not only inconceivable, the idea is offensive. It is offensive then of them to actually ask them to think differently. They're offended by that. They don't mind being woke. Okay, but they do, but it is offensive. This is why you haven't heard about the Space Force. Okay? Trump was a visionary in terms of that. So was Reagan in terms of the Strategic Defense Initiative, which they all called Star Wars. Why wouldn't you want a missile defense? That's just common sense. Oh, no, can't have that. You know, Russia might feel they have to attack, you know, before we get our defense up. Now, the whole idea of a defense is not an offense. We need that, too. Offense is a deterrent. Defense says you're not going to win. You know, we're going to save our people, even if you try and attack. Okay, same thing now. The Space Force. Brilliant idea. We need it. Okay? But we don't have it because these people are still convinced that we still have aircraft carriers. Okay? You can call me crazy, but the aircraft carrier is obsolete and has been since missiles could destroy aircraft carriers. Aircraft carriers won World War II. Let's in the Pacific. Let's get it straight. Aircraft carriers won the war. They went at Midway, Coral Sea. You know, they really and they ended the war with the atomic bomb. Yes, I know thousands upon thousands upon thousands of American GIs died fighting for those islands, but I'm convinced that was never necessary. You know, you take the islands that need airports. Actually, you cut off supply lines. And in cutting off supply lines, you pick an island, you know, that is on the way between Midway, you know, and whatever island is next. You concentrate on that one island, create your airfield there, and you bomb Japan from there. Once the supplies are cut off, the bottom half of the Japanese forces, you know, A, they can't get back, and B, they have no food or ammunition. So that's strategic. But we weren't strategic. We were island hopping, you know, in the most violent and wasteful way possible. So, yeah, World War II is a fascinating study. But MacArthur, you know, was a system maintainer. That's the way it had been done. You know, I'm sure his father did it that way. And before them, that's how they fought wars, you know, piece by piece by piece, as opposed to creative thinking, cutting off the supply and ending the battle. What ended Nazi Germany, a lot of people don't know this, was the taking of the Ploesti oil fields. That's where Senator Bob Dole got crippled. You know, Anzio. That was in Italy, but it was on the way to the Ploesti fields, which I think are in Romania. That's where the Germans got all their oil from. That's why they had to make synthetic fuel, because once the oil fields were taken, they had no fuel for the Luftwaffe or for the Panzer tanks. That's what ended the war, folks. They stole the fuel. Okay, we stole the fuel. So that's it. You're not gonna, you can't make a war without fuel, and that's how it works. You got to have metal, ammo, and fuel, and you lose the metal, you can't build the armaments. You know, you lose the ammo, you can't fight. You lose the fuel, and you can't go anywhere. Okay, that's how you end a war. Same thing would have worked for Japan. All right. And to turn it there, unless it's wrong. Okay, so this is in conflicts. This is back to the article. In conflicts like those in Iraq and Afghanistan, where the application of overwhelming American firepower substitutes for tactics and strategy because there are no enemy armies, air forces, or air defenses to fight, the historic outcome is a collection of enormous headquarters manned with far too many generals or admirals. Even worse, the headquarters tend to fill up with the weak, untested, but politically savvy senior officers or the PowerPoint Rangers, as the saying goes. Okay, this is a new term to me, PowerPoint Rangers. Okay, so I looked it up, and there's a couple of articles. This guy, Lawrence Sellett, who I'm going to try and have on the show, but he calls them PowerPoint Rangers. In other words, everything's done in the military by these PowerPoint presentations, and if it works on the PowerPoint, it must work in real life. Well, that's just absurd. That's irrational. That's insane to think about, but yeah, that's how they do it, right? Okay. So this is Iraq and Afghanistan, where the application of overwhelming American firepower substitutes for tactics and strategy. So yeah, did we have a lot of arms in Iraq and Afghanistan? Sure we did. Tanks, airplanes, you know, all kinds. But we did have a strategy. Well, who is the enemy? What, the Taliban? That's the people. You know, the Taliban is everybody. You know, the Taliban is everybody who isn't Taliban outside Kabul or Kabul. So the Taliban is all the goat herders and all the folks in the, you know, every little hamlet. You know, it's like in Vietnam, the Viet Cong. Who are the Viet Cong? Well, they were the people. North Vietnamese, South Vietnamese, they didn't care. It was still Vietnamese as far as they were concerned. You know, it's a fascinating thing that the ignorance and the arrogance and the World War I, make the world safe for democracy, Woodrow Wilson's claim, that these generals are still trying to make the world safe for democracy. Well, you don't make democracy in Afghanistan or Iraq. You don't, and you certainly don't do it by military. You might do it by persuasion, by showing folks, hey, this is how freedom works for us. You know, not only is it good in terms of laws, it's also good economically. Freedom works, okay? Freedom creates the best laws. Freedom creates the best economies. Freedom creates the most clean environments. Freedom creates the strongest military. A volunteer military is far stronger than a draft military of conscripts that don't want to be there. So for all these things, freedom works better than tyranny. Always has, always will. But most countries opt for tyranny because you got an elite in charge, elite core, and then they have a bunch of idiots under them because they don't want to be threatened. And some of those idiots are in the military, and that's how it works. So let's go back to the PowerPoint Rangers. So we have our PowerPoint Rangers. It was kind of funny, actually. So the article says the numbers of four-star generals and admirals currently in the U.S. Armed Forces illustrates the problem. For a force of 1.1 million active duty service members, the current U.S. Armed Forces are commanded by 40 four-star generals and admirals. So I'm not sure how the admiral works, brigadier, admiral, major, I don't know, whatever it is, but there's four-star. So the admirals have four-stars. That's the four grades. It's like, you know, fourth-degree black belt. Okay, so four-star generals and four-star admirals are the top. They're the top, and we have 40 of them. Well, that's fascinating. It says, for readers, this is back to the article, for readers who may think this command overhead is normal, they should know that for most of World War II, when there were 12.2 million Americans in uniform, the nation relied on seven four-stars to command the armed forces. Seven. We have 40 now, and we're not in a world war. We had seven then when we were at a world war, just to give you a comparison. And we did just fine. Well, except for Admiral King. He got sort of shut out of it. Anyway, so the four stars were Marshall, who was like commander supreme. I think he was actually a five-star. So he was the overall Allied commander, was General Marshall. And then he had MacArthur. And then he had Eisenhower and Arnold. And they were the Army, Ground, and Air Forces generals. And then he had Admiral King, Admiral Nimitz, and Admiral Leahy for the naval forces. Admiral Leahy, a former chief of naval operations, served as President Roosevelt's senior military advisor who interpreted FDR's strategic guidance but held no designated command. That's what the article says. Now, is Admiral Leahy the father of Senator Patrick Leahy? I don't know. Wouldn't that be interesting? I doubt it because Patrick Leahy is such a liberal. I can't imagine that Admiral Leahy would have Patrick Leahy as a son. I think they just share a name. But, you know, these are the things that come to mind. So that's it. Marshall, MacArthur, Eisenhower, Arnold, King, Nimitz, and Leahy ran World War II for the United States. 12.2 million Americans in uniform with a two-front world war, one in Europe, one in the Pacific. And you were 12 with seven guys, okay? So now we have 40, and we're not in a world war. It's just a fascinating thing. Anyway, so the article says, Marshall deliberately kept the numbers of four stars to a minimum, saying, quote, I don't have time to argue. That's a really great line. He says, more than 77 years after World War II, it's time to reinstate Marshall's wise policy. The growth of numerous agencies, technical support organizations, and high-cost logistical and acquisition programs have driven the rank and experience required to command operational fighting forces into a very small corner. So in other words, the people who can win wars are being replaced by the bureaucrats. And that's usually how it works. This is not unusual. I think most countries do this. You know, World War I had bureaucrat armies. You had your aristocracy. You had your leaders at the top who would stupidly order men to their deaths, you know, riding horses and running into barbed wire and machine guns and artillery fire. Oh, brilliant. They did it for 4 years, proving it would work. It never did. You know, isn't that the definition of insanity? You know, repeating the same action, expecting a different result. No, it didn't work that way. So in fact, by that definition, the military commanders in World War I were truly insane. They're insane for fighting the war in the first place. Because it wasn't going, once you got in the trenches, it wasn't going anywhere. You know, the nations just said, okay, stop. This isn't working. You know, we're just killing each other. Nobody's going to win here. We need to negotiate this. They should have sent the bureaucrats out and said, look, just stop the war. Just go home. Just stop this nonsense. Nobody's getting anywhere. Millions of people, a million men died in the Somme in World War I. It's one battle. You know, a couple of other places, same thing. And that's how it works. They just died. Anyway, back to the article. So I want to make sure I finish this. I had like five articles I was going to talk about this hour. I got through one. All right. That's pretty normal for Action Radio. It says, Marshall's insistence on streamlined command and control, on simplicity of orders, and on unity of command is more relevant than ever. This is Marshall, who ran basically World War II for the United States. He says, instantaneous, redundant space-based communications, surveillance, reconnaissance, intelligence, and missile technologies have wrought profound change in the way military operations can be conducted. The next administration must revisit the 1947 National Security Act and the 1986 Goldwater-Nichols Department of Defense Reorganization Act. Guess what we're going to talk about next week. Okay, at some point I'll get to that. This is, the article says, the 1947 National Security Act, I'm going to brighten up my screen a bit, it's getting brighter in here. The 1947 National Security Act resulted from the victory in the Second World War. It was designed to harmonize all the U.S. Armed Forces' capabilities. Instead, it fostered bitter budget fights, single service thinking, and dug deeper ruts for the senior officers to follow. Goldwater Nichols, that would be Barry Goldwater, I'm sure. I don't know who Nichols is. Goldwater Nichols subsequently created a command structure that is no longer suited to the new multipolar international system. Okay, so this is fascinating. So when they say single service thinking, you know, there are many countries that don't have separate Army, Navy, Air Force, things like that, Marines, Space Force. They don't. Canada doesn't. Canada has the Canadian Armed Forces. So there is no competition between the services because there's only one service. That wouldn't be a bad idea here. Well, of course, it might mess up the Army-Navy football game. But other than that, it wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, there's some thinking for you. Why do you have a separate Army, separate Navy, and a separate Air Force? Why does the Air Force need one version of the F-35? The Navy needs another version of the F-35, and the Army doesn't have an F-35, but they may want one. You know, we'll talk about the F-35 at some point, too. That is the greatest waste of money ever. The F-35 really encapsulates the insanity of the military-industrial complex and why they've made a weapon that doesn't work. It's all based on stealth, and stealth, as Dr. Pryor showed us and has been proven, stealth doesn't work. Any low-frequency, long-wave radar based on 1940 British World War II Battle of Britain designs can detect stealth aircraft. You know, I'm sure stealth aircraft show up on air traffic control. Oh, yeah, we see you. But I'm a stealth aircraft. Yeah, it doesn't matter. We got you. And that's with other transponder. I'm going to check that out. I'll look that up, but I'm quite sure that's exactly what happens. Back to the article. The services expect, get, and spend a predetermined price piece of the funding pie, fostering waste and redundancy. Too much force structure remains wedded to the World War II designs modified in 1947. New force designs and new technologies that could be exploited to streamline command and control and make operations more effective are excluded from consideration. Well, we haven't done it that way. We can't do it now. Other problems are caused by secretaries of defense, that would be Austin, whose priorities were too often being driven by the politics of apportioning money and technology to the, quote, right people or social engineering. That'd be the woke folks. And far less to the ruthless pursuit of building forces that can fight. And I would add, and win. The Biden insurrection, my word, divisive, racially charged policies and woke LGBT agenda may be the worst of these given their impact on military morale, discipline, readiness, and recruiting. And the fact that they're weeding out all the leaders, all the good people, by making them take a COVID jab that's not a vaccine for a disease that won't affect them hardly at all, if at all, and they're mandating something that is far more dangerous than the actual COVID itself. No wonder people are leaving. I would too. Anyway, article says, these points notwithstanding, the next administration's top priority must be a dramatic reduction in the four-star overhead and a commensurate reduction in the numbers of regional unified and functional commands. System maintainers can't do the job. Says, I'll go back over those categories again. It's really interesting. It says, America's military future must be shaped by two kinds of generals and admirals, system creators and builders, those who can theorize and design, and those who can harness people and technology with the ability to lead and inspire. These are the desired attributes that transcend the drill field, the parachute jump, or the routine exercise. Once the overhead is substantially reduced, these are the leaders, the civilians in charge that populate the next administration must identify and appoint. In a word, Alfred Thayer Mahan's advice to the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Theodore Roosevelt, remains valid. He said, no service can or should be expected to reform itself. So there you go. That's the article. And what I'm hoping is that these folks get their jobs back, that Colonel Doug McGregor becomes Secretary of Defense or Chief of Staff. Gets, I don't know if he's going to go back to the military. I think he's retired. So I don't know if he can do that. And we still call him Colonel McGregor, though. But could he be made Joint Chief of Staff head? Could he be made Secretary of Defense? Absolutely. Could Josh Whitehouse, who was on the show, talk about his time as basically the swamp drainer from the Trump administration to the Pentagon, could he get his job back and really do it? I hope so. I'm going to invite both these people back on. In fact, I'll send him this article. I'll send him this show with what I talked about this first hour, which is pretty much it. All right, let me take a break. See if there's any time when we come back before John Cullen gets here, and we shall see what's going on. Yeah, let me start. Let's start here. This is the promo I made, and I'm not sure how it happened, but there's like a 5-second delay on it. That's what always screws me up. So I'll start it now and then play this one first, and it'll make more sense. We'll get the rest of our sponsors, our affiliates, and anything else that comes to mind for me to play during this time. Yep, there's that delay. And here we go. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now, as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7144. 469. That's 469-864-7149. Great care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Okay, well, I could get into a whole big topic, but we've only got about 5 minutes, and John's pretty prompt, so I'm sure he'll be here right at 9 o'clock. And then, of course, the mystery is what's going to happen at 10 o'clock, because I'm always wary when I haven't talked to people myself personally or communicated with them personally before the show. And so I like to make sure they have the number, the times, everybody knows what's going on, and it was confirmed, and everybody's good, and away we go. Oh, by the way, tomorrow Mike Clinch is going to come back and join us. He's a school teacher, earth science. He's going to report on the further climate change absurdities. But something that's really kind of fascinating, excuse me, I'm sorry, and we'll probably talk about this more next week too, and definitely talk about it Friday with Derek Park, is who's our financial dude, is the oil situation. And so this psychology is fascinating, that the left can't stand American oil. It's not that they don't like oil. They just don't like American oil. And they're willing to go anywhere to get it except here. And it's like they can't – there's some kind of an ideological block that American oil is bad, and that if we simply get rid of American oil, we'll be forced to use wind and solar power. And that's – of course, we know it doesn't work. They don't. They want it to work, you know, and they're so convinced it's going to work. They're so convinced that their wishful thinking is going to make something happen. It's like metaphysics. If you believe it strongly enough, you know, it'll happen. Okay, well, I believe a lot of things really strongly, you know, but it doesn't mean they're going to happen. Okay, so we'll see. I believe I'm going to be flying a jet one day. Is it going to happen? I absolutely am convinced it will. Is it guaranteed? No. You know, and that's how these things work. Anyway, oh, I'm sorry. I can't believe, throw it again. That's what happens when you talk for an hour straight. Stuff happens. So they hate American oil. The left hates American oil. They hate what we call organic fuels now. They are organic. They're made of organic chemicals. You know, organic chemistry is based on carbon. Carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, that's what organic chemistry is. So calling oil, which is an organic compound, it's a hydrocarbon, and calling that, an organic fuel is perfectly consistent with science and English definitions. So the organic fuels, oil, coal, natural gas, and uranium. Well, uranium is different. It's not organic in the sense that it's the same as organic chemistry, but it is definitely an organic fuel. It comes from the earth. It's natural. Okay, it occurs here. The earth makes it. That makes it organic. It's artificial, like GMOs and weird pesticides, genetically engineered, all that kind of, that's not natural. Okay, so the natural things, uranium, coal, oil, and natural gas, are the fuels of the earth. They're the organic fuels, and so the left hates them for some reason. which I'm not quite sure. I mean, as much as I try and understand how the left thinks, I know they're driven by power. I know they have absurd dreams of utopia. I know that they govern by wishful thinking, but this one's really out there. So they know this nation runs on organic fuel. You know, the power plants, the trucks, the factories, all the mechanical processes, the plastics, the fertilizers, unfortunately, a lot of the medicines. All these things come from organic fuels. All come from petroleum. Petroleum is amazing. You know, it's a good thing that, you know, God put it in the earth so we have it to use at this particular time in our history. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? That the one time when the carbon cycle, carbon dioxide is at its lowest, and carbon is the basis of all life, and carbon dioxide is the basis of plant life, that's what they breathe, that the one time that in the earth when carbon dioxide was low, the Industrial Revolution comes along burning organic fuels, which release carbon dioxide back into the air so the plants can breathe, make more plants and more food so we can have more people and we'll fed. Isn't that interesting? You know, I'll let you play with that one for a minute. But anyway, that's where we stand right now. And so we've got this, this incredible situation where the left hates. It's like they don't even like science. They say they like science, but they don't. You know, climate change is a myth. It's made up stuff. It's based on wishful thinking, bad models, bad information, getting bad results. But the real climate science is that CO2 is part of the carbon chain and essential for plant life, and that putting CO2 in the air is a good thing. It's also true that the earth warms before carbon dioxide is produced. It's the warming earth that produces CO2, not the other way around. So the climate people will tell you that CO2, you know, causes warming. No. Warming, and the earth does warm. It warms and it cools. It does all kinds of things. It's probably going to cool soon, which means a reduction of carbon dioxide, which means we need to put even more carbon into the air and burn even more organic fuel, you know, to keep up the carbon so the plants can breathe and make us food. Okay? So that's how it works. Anyway, so they hate American oil. They stopped the Keystone Pipeline. They stopped drilling on all federal land that's really state land. So the state should take it over, but they don't. But they can. Okay? They put so many regulations in place that the oil companies and gas companies can't drill. They've got so many complications. They've ruined the supply chain. You know, they've made gasoline so expensive the truckers can't move stuff. You know, and all these ways, and they've cut off the oil leases, oil and gas leases. Oh, except on land where there is no oil and gas. They said, well, we released 7,000 leases last week. Yeah, it was nothing there. You know, so they purposely release leases where they know there's nothing there. They block offshore drilling. Except way out where it's really dangerous. You know, they block Anwar in Alaska, and I've been up to Anwar. I flew right next to it. I'm on my way to the Anaktuvuk Pass, you know, Piper Navajo, a little 8-passenger twin-engine Piper. We also flew at about 200 feet, too, to go scare the caribou. That's another story. But I was there. I saw the Anwar. You know what's up there? Nothing. Literally. It's tundra. A lot of wide open space and a few tiny wells. You couldn't even tell it was there. If you didn't know, you wouldn't know it was there. You know, so it's not this huge oil derrick gusher ruining the landscape, oil spilled all over. No, it's not that. It's very clean, actually. Anyway, but they cut off our supply of American oil and then wonder why the price went up. Well, the price goes up. Well, they knew it was going to. In fact, they said it was going to, but I don't think they were expecting the reaction of the American people to go, you idiots, you morons, you've raised the price of everything. Because when you raise the price of gasoline, you raise the price of everything that gasoline does. Transportation, industrial production, fertilizer, plastics, and the price of everything goes up. All right. Well, then the price, so supply and demand. If you reduce the supply, you increase the demand. The price goes up for whatever's left of the supply. Well, that's how it works, right? That was the first punch. The second punch was all that idiotic spending, the vast, incredible amounts of spending, the multi-trillion dollars worth of spending that, you know, cost inflation, because when you spend, when the government spends, then they have to borrow to be able to spend that money. So if they have a $1 trillion expenditure above revenues, well, they got to borrow the money to pay for it. And what they do when they borrow, they have to print the money to cover the loan. And that money reduces the value of the dollar. That's what inflation is. And when the dollar is reduced in value, prices go up so that the price reflects the value of the product or service being produced and delivered. That essentially is inflation. So you combine a reduction of energy with an increase in spending, you get massive inflation and you get shortages in supply. And that's where we are right now. And so they run around scrambled because ideologically they cannot get past the fact that they don't want American oil or natural gas or uranium or coal. So they don't want American resources being used because they hate this country. So they want to put us on this this utopian energy path. Well, it's not working for Europe, but it's not working for us. So on this ridiculous path of these different things to try and get, their ideal society where we all live in these little smart growth communities. I found out Milton has a smart growth policy. I'm going to talk about that soon too. That's in the works, as they say. See, I never talk about a show right away. I usually think about it for maybe a week or two, and then so that's why you get these long dissertations now, and I don't have to look up anything because it's already in my head. Anyway, we'll talk about smart growth later. That's environmental wackoism too. So anyway, so the left wants these little planned communities, smart growth, where they're crowded, lots of people in one place, so that the government transportation and the government housing and the government jobs and the government entertainment, the government food, and it's all self-contained. It's this ideal little, civil engineered, urban planned utopia that, of course, doesn't work because nobody wants to live like that. Only government people. And they don't even live like that. They live in suburban Virginia and they want it for everybody else. So they don't want the oil. They don't want the energy. They don't want your freedom. So no single family homes, no single driver cars, no single trips, no freeways open to anybody, no going wherever you want when you want. They can't stand that. But they know that America needs that in order to get the prices down. They're willing to get oil from anywhere else. So in other words, oil is not bad, just American oil. That's why they mind bringing in oil from everywhere else. And then they don't mind spending the oil that's already here that Trump bought. Our strategic petroleum reserve. So they don't mind using our oil as long as we don't drill for it. So corporations can't make a profit and people can't buy it at a reasonable price. There's nothing but profit. Companies making profits lower the price because they increase the supply. So what do you care if a company makes a ridiculous profit if the price for you is low? Doesn't matter. Would you be happier if the price were, if companies didn't make a profit and the price was still low? Doesn't matter. The price is still low. If the price were high, would you, and the company made no profit, would that make you happy? I don't think so. So the thing for you is the price is low. I'm surprised John hasn't checked in. Let me check my email here and see what's going on with, let's see what's going on here. Okay. All right. Actually, let me send John an email. I said, you are supposed to be now 9 a.m. Central. 9 a.m. Central. And let me just send that to him. And so that's why he's not here. okay. So if that's the case, let me send another email. I'm starting to do emails while I'm here. Let me play something here for a couple of minutes. What can occupy you for a couple of minutes of interesting fun here? I'll play one of my many pieces what I haven't done for a while. Now that we're getting into October, we're into that Christmas season. So let me play my Christmas season greeting. This is one I made like 3 years ago, back in the middle of the blockades. So let me see if I can find that for you here. Then I got to email John. This is what happens to you, live radio. And I will have a producer soon. We're working on that. Just a matter of time. Yeah, this will keep me busy for a couple of minutes. So this is what I'm going to play up until Christmas. And so I'll get you in that Christmas spirit of lockdowns and COVID bureaucracy. I have this for you. Let's see if it works. Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity brought about by bureaucrats in what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain-link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, But if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is a deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them. Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from Grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms. Drive extensively, preferably with the windows open. Patronize businesses that are in open rebellion. And resist, resist, resist the doctor dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. And now that I have your attention, so it looks like John's going to join us in the next hour. So I'm sure we'll talk about this. He was supposed to be 9 o'clock Central, and this has happened. This happens a lot of times. It's sort of the 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock Central Eastern time thing, the East Coast time continuum. So that's okay. This is why I don't worry about stuff on Action Radio, because I always have stuff to cover. I haven't played that piece for a while. Well, not since last year. And so, yes, I'm proud to say that I am the first person to play a Christmas announcement, you know, in October because I could and because I haven't heard it for a while. And I was kind of curious to hear what it said. All right, so let's get back to our theme. So our theme is the incompetent military, the bureaucratic military, and all the other problems that we have here. And we shall go with this article. Actually, I got somebody. I think I know who that is. I think that's hang on just a second here, folks. Let me. Yeah, I'm going to take a chance. I think I recognize that number. I could be wrong.
Greg,
we'll find out. Hey, Judy, how you doing? Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was your number. So I'm trusting my memory, but I was right this time. So, yeah, so we're supposed to have Dr. Stella Emanuel in the next hour. And so,
right, so I'm going to listen to the first hour and do some work.
Well, we're supposed to have John Cullen this hour. So John Goode.
I know.
Well, it's an East Coast, West Coast. There's something about this Central time zone, East time zone. And I think he's on the West Coast anyway. He's where you are. He's on your side of the country.
Is he? Well, I'm actually on the East Coast.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why you're awake now.
Right. Yeah,
well, let's get an update. Tell me, we've got a couple minutes. Tell me what you're doing, and then I can then tell you about military incompetence.
Military incompetence. Well, I'm working on basically all the solutions for the problem. So focusing on the various repurposing of drugs, things we can do, getting all the shots stopped. And, you know, we're just driving. We were supposed to be presenting at a ChiroFest, a chiropractic meeting today in Orlando. That got moved to January. So moving on to the healing, working with Mickey, working with Dale, working with everybody to try and you know, just stop the shots and stop the poisoning, I should say, with this glyphosate poisoning, other forms of genetically modified organisms injected or ingested. So, and then we're just, you know, really zeroing in on things like we've got the solutions for this. We've got solutions like Cardio Miracle, nutritional solutions. I'm preparing. We're going to do a webinar with, I think it's Josh Yoder, who's military, mm-hmm. flyers who were hurt. We were in Destin with JoJo and the team down there at Eglin Air Force Base, you know, trying to get the solutions to these guys because, you know, the people that took the shots, the people being shed upon, you know, we know there's a problem. It doesn't mm-hmm. really matter whether they planned it or not, though we know that happened too. We're just trying to move on to the solution, and they're all here, and they've been here all along. So instead of fighting each other, we're getting these people the healing they need and getting these kinds of more healing talks out there. Okay, here's what you do. If you want to try this nutritional support supplement for the myocarditis, the Cardio Miracle is just fabulous, with two publications on how it increases your production of vitamin D, you know, how it, you lose weight, you get everything, the minerals working well and the vitamin D working well, and everything is synergy. And that's my whole life is taking advantage of synergies, appreciating the pathogenesis, how things cause disease, but knowing or contribute, I should say, to disease, but fixing it. So that's why I want to tune in and hear Stella Emanuel, and I always love to hear John and you. So that's what we're up to.
So the doctor's panel that ended is restarting for today for an hour.
Well, yeah, that's we didn't actually end it. I'm just listening in as far as, yeah, we're, because
okay. Well, so
that's what Stella does, and that's what we all do. And that doctor's panel, the docs on the right side of history is mm-hmm. still that channel with Ben Marble, Ryan Cole, lots and lots of doctors, Deborah Viglione. They're all here, and we're all still out here working on it. And that's why I thought, well, as long as I'm reading papers, I can listen in and add to what I present to them.
Okay. Well, I'll give you something a little different then for this case, because I was talking about there's a couple of people I had on before on the show. You might have seen Colonel McGregor on Fox News with Tucker Carlson. He's probably the most intelligent critic of the military and the greatest analyst right now of what's going on in Ukraine. And so his you know, things he's telling us are completely different than the mainstream news. And the other person on the article is Josh Whitehouse, both of whom have been on the show. So I want to get him back because this is an interest of mine, being sort of an amateur military historian. So I always get into these things, and I might even get into the F-35 and other, you know, wastes of time like stealth and stuff like that. So not your specialty, but that's the fun of the show. I hear birdies. You got crows back there? That's great.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful where we are. We're in Wilmington, North Carolina. It's a beautiful sunny day, and unfortunately, I'm sitting in a chair instead of walking on the beach, but I'm still sitting in the sun.
Yeah, duty calls. So do you want to mute yourself, or because I can leave your line live if you want to, you know, come back at any time. But if you want to mute it,
okay,
then I can just rant. Let me just rant for a while, and then we'll get, as soon as John comes in, he might be a few minutes late. And the other issue before you go, Dr. Stella Emanuel, I haven't been able to contact with her folks. Josie organized this last night late in the church, so I haven't heard from them, so it's not official. That's why I say if she's not here, then something got complicated or they never got the word to me or who knows what. So this is one of those great moments in anticipation on radio. We think it's going to happen, but I'm not entirely sure. So we'll sort of go from there. Okay.
Okay.
So mute yourself,
I'll
please.
Mute,
and then
you can rant.
And then I'll rant. Yeah. I'll mute you, rant. Got it. Because we don't have fun here.
Okay.
And so, like I said, drop back if you find something interesting. Again, it's always fun to hear about things that people aren't experts in. And that's the thing about it being a host,
right.
A talk show host, you're the ultimate generalist. And so that's how that goes.
Right.
So back to my articles here. This is one I found in Wired. Apparently, there was somebody in the Afghan conflict, this Lawrence Sellin, Sellin, that wrote an incredibly critical article of what he calls the PowerPoint Rangers. And these are the military people that try to do everything by PowerPoint. That they make their speeches, their statements, their meetings, and it looks great on paper, but in actuality, we were at war for 20 years, and I still can't think of the reason. So my greatest regret is all those that went and served, and God bless them for going. But You know, those that came back who were killed in action, who came back, you know, with all the injuries, traumatic brain injuries, various chemicals, burn pit, everything else that happened to them, plus the jabs. You know, I don't know if they're still doing the Gulf War jab, but there's no reason for the things that are happening in our military. And I've always said, and I know that a lot of people will conflict with this, but you'll hear all the time that, you know, they think, well, who's fighting for our freedom? Well, the military is. Well, yes, they are, but there's a lot more fights for freedom. And the real fight for freedom, what Judy's doing, you know, what we're trying to do at Action Radio with our legislation, what people all over the country are doing to try and take the Marxism out of our government and get back to what we're supposed to be, which is a free country. So this article says, U.S. officer in Afghanistan mows down PowerPoint Rangers. And this is from Wired. It's taken from a UPI article, which I could not find. So I couldn't get the original, which I normally like to do. So it says, are you an aspirin-gulping staff officer who suffers migraines because of the military's over-reliance on PowerPoint presentations? Ever wanted to walk out of a pointless briefing because PowerPoint substitutes for critical thinking? It sounds like an ad. I could do this. A colonel at NATO headquarters in Kabul is your new patron saint. In an epic rant, which I tend to like to do myself, published by United Press International, which I can't find, Lawrence Sellin, and that's S-E-L-L-I-N. Now, he's got a whole bunch of articles. I want to get this guy on the show. Then he has an organizational chart, Afghan stability. You've got to see this article. I tried to post this one. It didn't work. They wouldn't let me post it. There's a couple of ones I had today that I'm not able to post. But this is, imagine a bowl of spaghetti. All right. And imagine that that bowl of spaghetti is an organizational chart. OK, and there's all kinds of like little landmark things within that bowl of spaghetti, little labels, tiny little labels all over it. That's what this chart looks like. OK, it is hysterical. So then they repeat the first paragraph. So let me continue on. And this is the article in Wired. Let me see who wrote this one. Does not. Oh, Spencer Ackerman. So Spencer Ackerman took the UPI article that I can't find, which obviously he did. Unless he is a her, and wrote a critique of it, which is hysterically funny. So Spencer Ackerman, A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N, in Wired, and it was August 26th of 2018. So this is a little bit older, but or is that 2010? 2010. Oh, same problem. The war went on for 20 years, so, you know, obviously nothing's changed. And then he said, and then Spencer says, in an epic rant published by United Press International, that is UPI, Lawrence Sellin, an Army Reserve colonel, on his second tour in Afghanistan. Don't you love how they call them tours? Where are you on tour? I'm going on tour to Afghanistan. You know, it's the battle conflict. You know, you're going after goat herders and their five-year-old wives. I mean, this is just, does anybody really think, honestly, that this is where the fight for freedom is with these people? They've been at war with each other for centuries. No, this is not the place we should have been. And yet, the permanent war class, those that always have to have us at war somewhere so we can borrow money, make military things, test our weapons, and do whatever it is the permanent war class wants to do to feel good. You know, when they I guess it's like, you know, bombs put them to sleep at night. You know, most people count sheep over a fence. These guys count B-52s. Whatever it is, they are a sick class of people, and they should not be in government. And yet they are, headed up by John Bolton, you know, the Bush family, the Clinton family, with the Obama family, all the families that the control the globalist families that keep us at war in places just because they want to keep us at war in places. Back to the article. Sellin serves on a staff. I guess he was still there this time in 2010, serves on the staff of the – he was kicked off, by the way. I found later articles. Sellin serves on the staff of the International Security Assistant Force Joint Command, or the IJC, the organization formed last year to oversee the war's day-to-day operations. Wait a minute, I've been going for 10 years at this point. Then they formed the day-to-day operations thing? That's typical military. Then it says General David Petraeus has praised IJC, that makes sense, as a key move to, quote, get the right organizational structures in place. Colonel Sellin considers it a waste of time. I'm with him. Inside AGC, the war, quote, consists largely of the endless tinkering with PowerPoint slides to conform with the idiosyncrasies of cognitively challenged generals in order to spoon-feed them information. I don't have to make up comedy, God. This guy is brilliant. He says every one tiny flaw in a slide can halt a general's thought processes as abruptly as a computer system's blue screen of death. Not that he's complaining or anything. Each day is guided by the battle rhythm, which is a series of PowerPoint briefings and meetings with PowerPoint presentations, Sellin continues. I mean, I can see this happening. You know, do you guys remember, who was it? Schwarzkopf. I think it means blackhead in German, right? So General Schwarzkopf. Yeah, no, don't say that. Sorry, he's an American general. I'm teasing. I do that sometimes. Anyway, so Schwarzkopf would get up, Stormy Norman. So Stormy Norman would get up these briefings. In fact, the Gulf War was full of briefings. They were briefing all the time. Now I know what he's talking about. And this is in 2010. So this is years later, right? So you go back in your memory banks and you remember all these briefings. But I didn't realize that's what they did all day. I thought that was for our benefit, that they had these little PowerPoint things. Apparently they use PowerPoints for themselves too. You can win a war with PowerPoints. You can't win a war with a schematic. Okay, you actually have to get in and do it and see what's going on. See, that's why Schwarzkopf was so good. Schwarzkopf was good because he actually was a fighting general. He was with the troops, got out there, he did his job, as opposed to General Milquetoast Milley, who probably has never seen a combat day in his life, who calls his counterpart in China, you know, in a treasonous act defying President Trump because he wants to make sure that China knows what Trump is doing, you know, in an absolute defiance of his role as commanding our military forces and could have gotten millions of them killed. So he shouldn't be there. Yet that's the kind of person who's there. So think of General Milley and his PowerPoints and his tea and his sort of, you know, and his crumpets, you know, before his meeting with his general staff, you know, discussing more things that they're going to discuss. So they had to plan their meetings. And this is how this works, right? Back to the article. Sellen continues, it doesn't matter how inane or useless the briefing or meeting might be. Once it is part of the battle rhythm, it is the persistence of carbon-14. I'll have to have Judy explain that when she wants to. And this is Christian Blauer. Thank you so much for bringing this to my attention. There we go. I'm not sure. Carbon-14, that's probably Judy, when you can. Drop a hint of what carbon-14 is. Anyway, it's a good, Judy and I talked about the carbon cycle on one of our great doctor's panels. And then he says, how pointless is the so-called commander's update assessment? The commander doesn't bother to show up, but a phalanx of colonels has to attend. There's even a high school-esque roll call. General Milquetoast Milley, present. Briefers rotely articulate what they project for the room in PPT slides. I'm not sure. I guess that's PowerPoint. Is that the abbreviation for PowerPoint, PPT? Then why don't they just call it PP? I guess that's rude for some reason. Don't ask me why. Do you have the PP? Yes, we do, but it's not the PPT. Okay, fine. All right. I amuse myself too. This is why I do the show. It keeps me going as well. Anyway, so it says slides using a tone of voice, not unlike that of a congressman caught in a tryst with an escort. I can hear that voice too. He says 1- and 2-star generals try to stay awake. The briefing slides only change when a new commander arrives or the war ends. Guess which comes first? Yeah, the new commander. And it says the next month the IJC will adjust its organizational structure yet again. Sellen writes. Why don't they just say Sellen writes and then give me the whole quote? They always have to break it up. And you know, we knew who was talking anyway. The article says he doesn't really describe what the new structure will be, liken it instead to placing a stovepipe for information within another stovepipe. Well, there you go. I've got a secret. I know more than you do. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got power. Well, if knowledge is power, then secrecy is even more powerful. But the thing is, secrecy actually has to be based on something. If the secrecy is based on not knowing anything, if the dirty little secret is that there is no secret, there's nothing to base it on, but you still have power because it's a dirty little secret, and people think you do have a secret. It's fascinating how the psychology of all this works. All right. So the rationale for this bold move resides in the fact that an officer who is currently without one needs a staff of 35 people to create a big splash before his promotion board. Yes, people reinforcing people, doing the jobs of other people to reinforce those people too. It's from the Department of Redundancy Department. Sellen, back to the article, probably feels alone. Throughout my career, I have been known to walk that fine line between good taste and unemployment. Well, I know the unemployment side of it. I don't know if I even crossed the good taste part myself. He says he begins with his therapeutic rant by way of explanation, but he surreptitiously surveys his officers. He might find a resistance taking shape. Yeah, who are the people in the military that actually object to this? Those are the heroes. They're probably the ones who are leaving. Not just from the COVID snake oil jab, but just because the military is incompetent right now. God help us if we get in a real war. I mean, a real war, like a World War II real war. Not talking about an Iraq or Afghanistan or Ukraine. I'm talking about a real war with Russia, for example, which could very easily happen. Back to the article. H.R. McMaster, the one-star army general who pacified the Iraqi city of Tal Afar, bashed PowerPoint to the New York Times earlier this year. Oh, we got another good reformer. Saying it is rinky-dink slideshow, saying its rinky-dink slideshow can create the illusion of understanding and the illusion of control. James Mattis, a four-star Marine general, has said straight out that that PowerPoint makes the military stupid by reducing the complexities of war to animated bullet points. PowerPoint actually deprives officers of information instead of helping them, he argued. A healthy debate in the blogosphere, briefly followed by the revelation that Major General Michael Flynn, the military's top intelligence official in Afghanistan, is a PowerPoint hater. Okay, this is fascinating. Now, remember, this is 2010. So let's go back a little bit. General Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, that's the one that Trump brought in singing his praises, was going to reform the military, was going to get us out of stupid wars, and did exactly the opposite. So this is early Mattis. This is like a preview of Mattis. It's fascinating. General Michael Flynn, you should know who that is. He was head of Trump's national security. He was the national security advisor and head. What happened to Flynn? He's the one, I think, that told Trump he was being spied on. So he couldn't have that. So they demonized Flynn and got rid of him. Okay, I think they arrested him. They did an entrapment FBI operation to get rid of him because he knew too much. So that's why Flynn should be back heading up. He should be either attorney general or head of the FBI when Trump comes back in 2024. So here's back to the article. McMaster is now a top planning officer in Afghanistan. Mattis leads the U.S. Central Command. Is the momentum shifting? Well, I think they were going in the right direction, but as we know now, once Obama and the Brandon insurrection, you know, really screwed things up, the only aberration was Trump, and they tried to reform things. These two people here that wrote the earlier article, Colonel Doug McGregor and Josh Whitehouse, tried to fix and drain the military swamp, but they're going to have to start all over again, you know, because Brandon has brought in all the bad people, all the idiots, all the bureaucrats, all the yes men. You know, yes men that say yes to everything. Yes, sir. Yes, everything's great. Everything's fine. Ukraine's going great. Yep, don't worry about it. Yeah, a little more money. It'll all be solved. Yep, we're doing fine. The economy's great. You know, the inflation, the Hyperinflation Act worked just fine. Yep, no inflation, sir. Yeah, right. Anyway, hard to say. The last paragraph says, hard to say. The key persuadable figure is Petraeus himself, a thrall to the siren song of Microsoft's presentation program. As head of the U.S. Central Command, Petraeus, that's General Petraeus, brought his PPT slides to every public appearance he gave, describing as a general's First Amendment right. But I don't think the military has a First Amendment. Well, we'll talk about that later. The battle against PowerPoint clearly runs through Petraeus' office. For the insurgency to succeed, it can't merely replace PPT with Keynote. So there we go. So my question then is going to be, and when Judy gets back on the line at the top of the next hour, is how much PowerPoint was there? You look at the briefings that Dr. Fascist and Burks and Redfield and all the other health Nazis gave, you know, during the COVID imaginary crisis that they caused. They're all PowerPoint. You know, they had all these different things, and they always had these little definitions and shows. It's like a show. So PowerPoint becomes a show. It's really scary the way this works. And you've got to get past the propaganda or you're never going to understand what's going on. You just aren't. Okay, I've been talking way too much this show, so I'm going to play another amusing thing out of my sarcastic repertoire here. So for those, you know, for Judy and everybody else listening in, during the lockdown, I did not get angry. I got creative, and I made some rather interesting pieces, one of which I played earlier, the Christmas one. Let me see what I haven't. I played the New Year Normal Church and grocery store enough times. Let me try. I haven't done Chaz for a while. Let's play Chaz. This will be highly insulting to a whole bunch of people, mostly liberals. I'll save the January white sale, you know, where white people get sold again. I'll save that one for another day. Let me see. Where can I find? Here's Chaz. So this will occupy you for a few minutes, and then I'll be back. Ah, Seattle. Time to visit again, or for the first time. No matter how many times, you'll never forget this visit to Seattle. Watching the sun set on the west coast, the guitarists on the street corners, people walking, hanging around the many cafes and art enclaves, just taking it all in. From Pike Place Market to the first Starbucks, to the whales in Puget Sound, and views of Mount Rainier, there is nothing like Seattle. And now you can watch the sunsets glistening off the broken glass in the streets, various styles of bottles used for Molotov cocktails, fashion statements made with creative body armor, the use of improvised weapons, the never-ending art forms painted on every building, particularly the man parts, and the beautiful sound of voices in unison, expressing their fondest wishes and desires for your life and property. So how can you visit this enchanted never-never land of the Northwest during their summer of love? Snowflake Tours has teamed up with the Seattle Board of Economic Development, Tourism, and Riot Promotion to extend the warmest of welcomes to our latest attraction, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, affectionately known as Chaz, soon to be called CHOP, but we like Chaz better. If you think Disneyland is a good time, it's nothing compared to Chaz. Chaz being an autonomous nation within the United States, protected by the Seattle Mayor and City Council, you can't just walk in like illegal aliens at our southern border. This is because there is a wall and guards openly carrying firearms in order to maintain the security of this new fledgling nation. So, there is a procedure to gain access. Snowflake Tours has made this an escorted tour. For your safety, and so you'll be surrounded by people who look like you, white people will have an Antifa tour guide direct from their mommy's basement. But don't worry, they can protect you, because they are fully indoctrinated and trained with the latest techniques of mayhem and street combat.
Black people will be escorted by a member of Black Lives Matter. Fresh from riots across the country and funded by Amazon and other mega corporations, with their training and experience, you couldn't be in better hands. And of course, they speak black. Take in the wonders of Chaz while you are there. You can warm yourself by the burning book piles, feel the camaraderie as you are swept up in a march or rally, get a brief audience with our warlord, but not for too long, and be sure to make an offering. A blank check, signed, is preferred. Don't worry about the police, there aren't any, which is fine because there aren't any laws either. Businesses and attractions may not be there when you get there, depending on the needs of the people. The unique feature of this tour is that rather than enjoy the things that are already there, on this tour it's what you bring to the table that counts. Money, supplies, there is a whole provision list of things like food, water, batteries, jewelry, and other commodities of exchange to choose from in donation to keep Chaz a people's paradise. On this vacation, you show up with full suitcases and leave with empty ones. That's what makes this tour so special. Chaz, a new nation, a new concept, coming to a liberal city near you.
Oh, the fun we have here. I'm scrambling for buttons right now. I was like, where did my button go? So we got Judy Mikovits on hold. We got me here right now. And Judy's saying to herself, what the hell did he just play? That's what makes it fun. She'll be back at the top of the hour. Oh, you are there. Yeah. Did you like that piece? Was that fun?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was laughing as I filed 50,000 PowerPoints into a single folder that I've given over the last year.
Well, do you find the PowerPoint you see it too. You see it at the conventions. You see it at the doctors. But all these, the health Nazis in the public health departments, they all do this. And what is this PowerPoint?
Well, that's
PowerPoint?
What we all do.
Oh, okay.
It's a Microsoft Office document. So it's a Microsoft way of presenting papers, like you go take screenshots or you show slide figures, the literature supporting what you're saying when you're giving when you're giving a talk. You know, so when I'll make a different PowerPoint to fit the audience, depending on whether they want legal or scientific. I'll go all the way back to the first PowerPoints in 2009, the one I gave about the blood supply being contaminated, New York Academy of Sciences, you know, so that we have these PowerPoints. They can't make them go away. That means we told you. We told you the blood supply was contaminated. We told you these recombinant viruses you've been constructing in the lab and injecting in things you're calling vaccines that are, in fact, thinly veiled bioweapons. We showed you the data of how they were going to get neuroimmune disease, meaning neurological dysfunction, autism, Parkinson's disease, lupus, Alzheimer's. You know, we showed you the mechanism down to that really horrific thing I do, which is the cell sensors and how they've targeted certain epigenetic and genetic abilities, like, oh, hey, black people make much more vitamin D. Because they're exposed to much more sunlight, so they have to have resistors in the sensors so that they don't over control or over inflame those 600 reactions controlled by vitamin D in your immune system. So that's how we make black people more susceptible to RNA viruses, because they're more worried. Their immune systems, you know, they don't care. They're the strongest immune systems in the world to a little old RNA virus that'll degrade in about 10 seconds if it's exposed. That's why we have to create mRNA that doesn't break down the way God does and has us do, because we're the strongest in the world, where the parasites don't get in the cells. They're big for them, you know, so they destroy your red blood cells. So we got the parasites. We got the pure energetic modulation. That means ATP, energy outside the cell, is a danger signal. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm just putting together the PowerPoints to say, hey, everybody, we've had all the solutions. Here are the papers. 1972, we described pure energetic modulation. 1992 were the first experiments. We showed that the on-off switch of our endogenous viruses, endogenous means God-given, in your genome.
Oh, okay.
In your genome. Exogenous means exo, came from the outside. Well, the xenotropic gamma retroviruses are foreign. They're foreign, they're synthetic, they're mouse manufactured or monkey. And yeah, every single vaccine contains the endogenous virome of the animal or other human cell line you put it in. So if you inject a boatload, I mean, these are not the first mRNA vaccines. We put mRNA, DNA, and protein from cows, dogs, monkeys, birds, other humans in the aborted fetal cell lines. So your immune system is going to say, this is not me. And it's going to start spitting out ATP in order, a signaling molecule. ATP is your energy, you know, ATP, energy. And so it's going to spit out the energy, and energy outside the cell is a danger-associated molecular pattern, because you need the energy in your cell, in the mitochondria, given your muscles energy. The most systems in your body with the most mitochondria are found in your brain, your heart, in your muscle. Oh, long haul COVID, which would be myalgic encephalomyelitis or lupus or any of the so-called autoimmune disease, you don't attack yourself. You're trying to say too much non-self, too much non-self, and you send out so much ATP that it totally suppresses parts of your immune system, and your mitochondria absolutely can't function, can't make more energy, and all your energy's outside the cell trying to save you. So your muscles shut down first. You start falling down. You get weakness of the leg, of the muscle, of whatever. You can't do your sport. If you power on and keep running, then your brain stops functioning and you get confused. The last thing is you have a heart attack. So the pilots are particularly susceptible because they take a ton of oxidative stress as they fly above the ozone layer, and everybody in an airplane that is pressurized to a 8,000 foot mountain, you know, yeah, you're going to be gasping for air.
Oh, I told you
so
that.
Why in the world
remember?
Did you wear a mask?
Yeah, my flight instructor training.
When we started this whole BS about the mask, I said, sure, I'll wear that mask, but I won't wear the one feeding the oxygen, but I won't wear any other one. And of course, then I wore the silver mask and they beat me up because that might actually work. So we know the game. So we're just going to find the solutions. I'm tired of, you know, she said this and that's not true. And she said that, you know, I don't care. The people who listen to us are getting well, their hair is growing back. I don't care if they say I sell vitamins or anything else. I'm actually giving you nutrition. You've been poisoned over the last four decades, starting with Twiggy and the fake fat that made your, in the statins. We've gone over this before. So all I'm doing now is just, we have so many solutions and people are doing so fabulously on adding a simple powder, food, clean amino acids, swamp out the glyphosate, swamp out the Roundup. You know, we're just putting it all in there. We're sitting in the sunshine, getting people well. And I can't wait to hear Dr. Stella as she comes on, see how she's been doing. Because I know we never leave the road. We're all out there. All we care about is that you get well. So the people that want to, shall I say, come to Jesus will, and the rest, you know, oh, well, we'll see you, you know, on the other side.
You know, it's a fascinating comment, too, and I was talking to another person, one of our new friends here, Juliet Ramos, who has a multi-million listener podcast, and she's going to be helping us out here, too, is that everybody, her included, has a really strong belief in God, and the people that believe strongest in God also believe strongest in freedom. And it's a fascinating thing. It's the people that believe in government that believe in complete oppression, or that don't have God in their life in the same way. You know, or that are, you know, anywhere from agnostic to organized religion to, you know, they're still not quite sure. They still have, still think that government, you know, as a power, has a power over people that somehow because it's government, it's right. And nothing could be further from the truth. It's quite fascinating. I got a question on PowerPoints, though, because you use PowerPoints all the time.
And carbon,
go ahead.
Carbon 14, by the way, is a radioactive, is a radioactive isotope of carbon. There are three carbons in the world. We talked about carbon 12,
right.
13 is another isotope, and carbon 14 is radioactive. So we use it for like dating how old a tree is, like the carbon ring. So
that's carbon dating.
Half life of,
that's the carbon dating.
Yeah, carbon dating.
Okay.
Got 5,000 year half life. And we use it a lot in the laboratory and in various medical processes because it only penetrates like half a centimeter in water. So it's a low energy isotope and we can use it safely in the lab. That's what it is.
Hmm. I had forgotten that. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, that's we're
kind of all over the place today, which is interesting. So this we could call this the war and sickness show. You know, we like or the cure and the peace show. I mean, we are all over the place today. This is kind of fun. Do you find that with PowerPoints that this sort of I know what they are, I know how they work, but it's kind of like a mystique that if it's on a PowerPoint, it must be true. That if someone shows a slide, the audience goes, oh wow, even if you put something totally outrageous up there. They go, oh, wow, I didn't know that. That must be true. It's on a PowerPoint. Do you get the mystique and the persuasive power of these things and how the military can screw themselves up because they're all doing PowerPoints?
I put the references. I always put the references. So I tell you the source. It just gives me my PowerPoint, what I use it for is so I don't go off into La La Land and talk about all the fun stuff and I stay on point. So I stay with the PowerPoint. I stay on point and I put the literature to cite every word I'm saying, not one word I say in any talk. That's what a scientist does. Show the data. You can interpret it in any way you want, but data are data. And that's why people can't touch me because every one of our books, or they just say I'm ugly or whatever, drunk, I don't care. In the morning, you'll still be ugly. And
I'm the
stubborn,
nerd warrior.
Right?
What do they say about me?
I don't care. I really don't care what they say about me, and I never have that. But my mom
the first
taught
thing you
me
get
that
over.
Way. It's fine.
Yeah.
But, and I always just show the data. So when you show the data don't lie, and, you know, that's kind of that.
Okay, that makes sense. It's interesting that the government, I'm sure, does the same thing. They cite their sources, but their sources are government sources, and there is such a difference. I find it fascinating that I can hear your computer in the background. That you look at the government sources. You know, you've got the Center for Medicare Services funding, you know, remdesivir ventilator death marches. You've got Dr. Fascist, who's in it for the royalties and the money. He still wants all. You know, he's not going to the millions upon millions he's earned above this. This is absolute fascism. It's a corporate government conspiracy to make billions and control people. And I'm not even sure about the depopulation aspect. That's something we can talk about as well. It looks like Josie's on the line too. So let me get her on as well. Maybe we'll get an update on what's happening with Dr. Sel Emanuel. But it's just this the difference between government science and real science, government doctors and real doctors, government doctors, you know, following a government policy, real doctors finding a cure, is so drastic and so sharp that the mystique of the expert, we're almost better off, is that, well, I'm from the government, so, someone says that, I said, okay, I'm immediately skeptical of you. Are you operating from policy? Are you operating from Marxism? Are you operating from an incredible bias of government power, or do you actually have good information? See, I'm much more likely to believe a private doctor who's actually got experience and knows what's going on and has evidence to say, okay, this is what I found. This is what worked in my patients. This is what I'm using. That to me makes more sense than, Dr. Fascist saying, well, we're going to use remdesivir, a failed Ebola drug, and we're going to put you on a ventilator, and that's the only thing you can do. Well, the whole idea that that's the only thing you can do immediately makes it suspect. But you see the difference? And it's so stark between government doctors and private doctors. Couldn't be more clear with COVID. Yeah.
Right, and that's what all these licensing organizations are. You know, oh, we'll take away your license. We all know the laws that Newsom signed into law. If you're a doctor and you speak a different narrative, to your patients about COVID, you lose your license. So here it is. It's set in stone. You know, we murdered a zillion people, and if you say one word about it to your patients, you lose your license. So that what we've got to do is take away all this license bullshit because, PhDs aren't licensed. I always say I'll use what I discovered anywhere. My job is to teach. And the doctors that do good work, I loved the high wire a few weeks ago with Dr. Paul Merrick on it. And he was in the hospital looking at sepsis and just using a combination of three simple things, vitamin C, whatever. I'll remember what they were sometime. But at any rate, they're like, we need to do a clinical trial. No, we don't. We don't need to do a clinical trial for three things that have been safe, like ivermectin. If we use them no higher than the maximally tolerated dose and what we we do when we do synergies and add three things together that are known, safe, and effective, like vitamins, vitamin C. We don't need a clinical trial for God-given vitamin C, and that's what the nurses say. No, we won't do it. It's working. These patients are living. You know, see ya. And that's what we need. Give medicine back to the practitioners. Give medicine back to the smart doctors. Hang your little shingle on the door saying, Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, and anybody that wants to walk in can do it. Acupuncture, you know, we know acupuncture changes purinergic modulators, those danger signals. You can turn down the sensor on the cell surface with something as simple as acupuncture. Non-invasive. We work with cannabinoids. Yeah, there's so much crosstalk and so much in natural, non-invasive energy therapies. So, you know, if we can convince everybody to, or if we can work to end this plague of corruption once and for all so it never happens again, you know, then if you want to go take the COVID shot and pay your money, you know, go for it. You know, no more insurance. That's death. That's sick stuff. My insurance is God. In fact, all the way through Obamacare, my tax accountant just said, you insured? And he knew I wasn't. No, I never am. I don't believe in that. And I said, yep. And I pointed to God, said, yep, got God. And I don't mean Fauci or Obama, so we're good. And he checked the box on my tax return. It's like, you know, they fine you if you don't pay $1,000 a month for some of these insurance plans and for the very basic stuff. And you don't have it. You can't work. You pay a fine. Why? And then your deductibles are hundreds of dollars. I didn't make $1,000 a month. And in any month between 2010 and 2020, I'm not giving it to help. And when I was a kid, you know, for the first 20 years of my career at National Cancer Institute, I never made more than $30,000. It's like, you're kidding me. I'm not going to pay $12,000 for health insurance. We all have to think back to where this came from. It's not health insurance. It's a company controlling medicine, and they keep you from getting the up-to-date, the latest data on drugs that we, you know, we had these solutions in 2007. We begged to give those infected with XMRVs the relatively safe, highly active antiretroviral therapy. And when we did give it to people, they got better. And everybody said, oh, that's anecdotal storytelling. I don't care. If it's safe enough to advertise on TV, if you can cite the pathway and you can explain it to the patient, which is I explain it to the doctor and the doctors explain it to the patients. This is the point. They're trained to talk to normal people. I'm trained to talk to them. And we speak different languages. That's why you can't simply put a psychiatrist up there who says, oh, there's no such thing as viruses. I don't care what you say. Go do it. Go purify them. Go not purify them. You know, if you don't believe in gravity, jump off a bridge. You'll do us all a favor. I don't care. You know, this is the whole point. If we all get to that point where we say, well, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm going to take back control of my own life. Your employer shouldn't pay for your Social Security. You know, your employer shouldn't be paying for your health insurance. That's why small businesses can't make it. And so then, you know, then you're a doctor, you're off protocol if you don't use the standard of kill as Newsom just signed into law. Oh, so you can premeditated murder somebody and take away a doctor's license, or even if a patient says, no, I want that drug, then they have to pay the exorbitant cost. Those highly active antiretroviral therapies, some of them are called like Vemlidy and Truvada and Genvoya. We give them away on the streets of San Francisco. And we make TV commercials saying we can live our lifestyle and keep our copy number of HIV down to zero so we don't spread HIV to our friends. What is that? A vaccination. So oral vaccinations. We begged for these drugs when we isolated and associated the XMRVs with devastating cancers and drugs. We begged for serum and did the clinical trial. That's the royal we, the Dr. Navio in San Diego in 2014 when he saw the data in 11, published it in 15. Double-blind placebo-controlled study. You have to use it right. We used it in 1986 in HIV, and it's the wrong kind of virus family. It doesn't work as well. They use it too high a dose, just like they did with the fraudulent hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin drug. Just use it wrong. Use it in the wrong patient at the wrong time. You know, call it dog shit like Celebrex and Vioxx. Know the half-life of your drug. Celebrex is and always was a fabulous cyclooxygenase inhibitor for lung cancers, for pain, for other things. And now here we've got doctors and let's just do more research studies. And this is why I got angry several weeks ago. It's like, no, we've had all these answers since 1972. The taxpayers paid for it, just like Dr. Merrick. You know, we can use vitamin C. We can use it along with other things, take advantage of synergies, which is a patent for a drug that we started working on. I consulted from 2004. The patent was granted in 2010. Take advantage of nutrition to protect from side effects, and you can use Casodex, the prostate cancer drug, really, really low dose. Do you think the FDA, even though it was through phase 1, phase 2 clinical trials, it actually cured some cancers? And they took it and they never approved it. The FDA, pay a bribe, $10 million. This was a small company. They went broke, just like Candace Pert and Peptide T, the Dallas Buyers Club. Never did it make it to market. And Peptide T could have stopped all of this and the many, many, many peptides. So they put the toxic peptide, syncytin, in every shot or the gene that expresses it. And then they send our immune system into auto-inflammatory, autoimmune, and cancer. And they say, look what happened. Or hypoxia, HIF, hypoxia-inducible factors. They're really important in cardiovascular disease. So you put everybody in a mask and created cardiovascular disease. And you're trying to convince people it has something to do with SARS-CoV-2, the monkey virus that you've injected in every single polio vaccine since you created in 2004. Not that it's not a virus. It says it doesn't hurt people with a strong immune system. The virus doesn't cause the disease. I have EBV. So do I. I have HPV. It never did cause cervical cancer. You know, we all have it. You know, why would you inject people who already have antibodies? What did you create? Antibody-dependent enhancer, the Gardasil vaccine that never was a vaccine. And yet, as we talked about last week, all that shit, fraudulent commercial is still on the TV, and as well as the flu vaccine. So we can't add vitamin C in a couple of drugs, but you can walk in a drugstore and get 4 of these shots in the same day along with the COVID poison to kill everybody. Correct. Who has no idea what your immune system looks like. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's get Josie in before we go past the. Yeah. Oh no, it's a good rant. I love your thoughts. I highlight
good.
Them
I
in,
like
in the show notes. Yeah. No, it's good. You're free. This is not a PowerPoint, so you are free just to feel free to rant. We've got to. In fact, ever since I discovered we had an overtime hour, things have been pretty cool. Josie, do you have any news on Dr. Stella? Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Judy. Dr. Stella is going to be calling in a few minutes now.
Okay, good.
I was going to ask Dr. Judy. I was talking to my niece, and last year she was at the hospital with COVID and all that, and they gave her remdesivir for 5 days. I'm surprised she's still alive. They trashed her lungs. She's been recuperating with the oxygen. She cannot go anywhere. She gets exhausted and tired. She's telling me her lungs are about 80% good now. That's what they told her. But I don't know what can she do. I mean, this is sad.
Oh, sure.
She's a young girl.
Do all of these things. Not their drugs. You know, not their drugs. Yeah, she's going to need some oxygen for a little while. Little cardio miracle, open up the endothelial, relax the endothelial, get the minerals flowing, get some nutrition, get nitric oxide flowing. I'm giving this, we're going to do a webinar this afternoon. I think it's on our web site. I'm supposed to be reading the papers or reminding myself how to not go off on rants. But we have all the answers.
Well, except here.
We have the solutions. They're going to be the appropriate use of low dose medications, just not anything they give you in the hospital. So you've got to get her on these nutritional. They're on our website, The Real Dr. Judy. All we do is identify the TheRealDrJudy.com, identify the companies. I'd be starting her right away with Cardio Miracle and some other nitric oxide formulations that you'll see there, that because you need some acute ones. There's some really good old inhaler, and this is why I keep talking about my husband. My husband had severe COPD for 40 years, and he got healthier and healthier and healthier. If she stops all the shots and works off, if she's taking any statin drug, stop it now. If she's taking any other drug, consult. We'll try to get doctors to consult with you and wean off of those things. But we got my husband off of absolutely everything, and his autopsy proved that he wouldn't die. The purinergic modulation affects the kidneys, so you're going to want ivermectin. Yes, ivermectin along with these things, they support each other, they synergize. There are many, many opportunities, and she doesn't have to end up like that. They knew what they were causing, and the commercial popped up right after they did it. And it's like, okay, we can all go home now. We created the market we intended to create. We make commercials of people pushing away the cigarette ashtray. That's when I throw things at the TV. Again, we're blaming behavior. My husband never smoked a day in his life. He couldn't. He got infected with a bacterial pneumonia in the hospital where he worked. That was an on-the-job injury. And these people are getting injured, the nurses, the doctors, the administrators, as he was. And they put these insulting ads on the TV and say, oh, just push back the ashtray. Or a fat black man. Oh, I'm just, with a note on the refrigerator not to eat that stuff. It's always our fault when you poisoned our food and poisoned our medicine and poisoned the brains of people to blame us and to look down on us and try to make us hate each other. Yeah, the most susceptible are the ones that have to eat poison and can't eat clean food or get decent health care. And now we're going to repurpose them again. No, we're going to close the FDA and let every drug, every single American paid for, no more taxpayer private foundations of NIH. That's disgusting. And as Robert Malone said, that's criminal, and it absolutely is. So we're out there, and we're going to continue to try and help her. But there are simple things she can do right now.
Hi, folks.
Thank you, Doctor.
let me just hop in here because we have Dr. Stella Emanuel and John Collins online.
Yay.
So first of all, John, good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. He's got the best microphone. And let me introduce our new person here, Dr. Stella Emanuel. So I've wanted to have her on the show for about 2 years. I remember that press conference way back when, I think it was the White House stairs or the Supreme Court or one of those places, and I thought, this woman is really cool. She's direct. She's blunt. She's our kind of folks. And so I wanted to hear her story, and Josie was nice enough to be in church yesterday to talk to her and her assistant and everybody else. And now let's welcome to our Action Radio, the reconstituted World's Greatest Doctors panel, Dr. Stella Emanuel. Welcome to Action Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm blessed to be here this morning.
Well, we're blessed to have you, too. And just to let you know, John Cullen, I don't know, have you talked to John? John, have you talked to Dr. Emanuel? Have you got
to
talk before?
No, I haven't. This is the first time.
All right.
First time.
So I'll let you introduce yourself.
Pleasure to meet you, Doc.
Judy's laughing or Josie's laughing. So we have me. I'm the host here. I'm Greg. And we're pretty much all on a first-name basis because everybody has a title, long titles for some of the folks here. So Josie is our Latina reporter. She grew up in Nicaragua under communism. She's a citizen legislator. I'm talking too fast. I'm getting excited. I got to slow down here. And so she's written a bill we'll talk about maybe at some point. Dr. Judy Mikovits, and Dr. Stella Emanuel is new to the show here. So, John, why don't you introduce yourself and give a brief description, and then we'll talk to Stella and find out what's going on with her these days, and then get into a bunch of things I want to talk about, like our legislation on vaccine product liability. So, John, let me turn it over to you, and then we shall continue on.
Sure. So, good morning, Dr. Stella. I'm familiar with your work, and so to me, you're famous. I saw you on the Candace Owens show, right? You did an interview recently with Candace, right? That was you?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with your work. And my background, many years ago, about 34 years ago, I was at Oracle. And at Oracle, I helped put together the mapping system that the Johns Hopkins University has been using to map the pandemic and track the pandemic's intensity. And I noticed that that mapping system that I built many years ago was being used incorrectly to portray the pandemic. And that's what got my attention.
Yeah, this is an example. Interesting to get you two together, because I didn't think you – I've never seen you two together on any show, and that's why and Stella, this is a chance for you to ask John questions, too, about the COVID map, about any information, because this, I'm sure, can help you as well. And we converse with each other here, so it's not me just asking all the questions. You guys can go back and forth. Feel free. In fact, I'd rather have that once I get you on the show. John, did you have a follow-up? I think I kind of jumped in there on you.
Well, why don't I share just a couple of points with Dr. Stella and Dr. Judy that may be new. This may be new information, or you guys may be aware of this. So I know that President Biden in the United States declared that the pandemic is over. All right, so that was his opinion. But I'm looking at data right now from Germany and from Japan, because pandemics are global. And Dr. Stella, your background, you're from Cameroon, right? Am I wrong about that? Is it Cameroon?
Yes, I'm from Cameroon.
Right. So I take a very global perspective when I look at a pandemic. It's not an epidemic. It's a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so when the President of the United States says the pandemic's over, I'm looking at the data, and I'm looking at Germany right now. And case numbers in Germany are rather dramatic at the moment. So they're not having a good run at the moment. Neither is Japan. So when I look at Japan, in the last 4 weeks in Japan, they've had a tremendous number of people pass away and case numbers and things like that. So I'm looking at these dynamics globally, and what Taiwan, Germany, Japan, even Russia are still having a rough go of it right now. So have you been looking globally at some of the other countries? Like, for example, I'm looking at the World Health Organization's reporting. So they have a map that they use to report on how many people have died. And I'm comparing the number of people that the WHO says died in China, and it's fewer than the number of people that have died in Ohio.
Yeah, I don't listen to what the WHO says, because they really should be banned from all nations.
Yeah.
But with the case numbers, I'm a clinician, and we have been seeing COVID patients. I think we've probably seen over 120,000 COVID patients or more. And we've had an uptick recently. I would say over the past, Delta and Omicron went really, really crazy, and then till about January started slowing down, and they slowed down to maybe we see maybe 10, 15 patients a day. There's never been a day we didn't see COVID patients. Mm-hmm. And then now we're having an uptick, you know, people are getting with the winter coming. I don't know why Biden declared that the pandemic was over, because if they really believe that, then The Federal Emergency Act should be stopped, which is what they used to harass us. And also
the EUA, you mean? The Emergency Use Authorization? You mean the EUA?
Yes.
Yeah,
no, not the
I agree.
EU. The PrEP. there was a federal emergency declaration that is still in effect till sometime in the end of 2024. So if they do believe that the pandemic is over, then that declaration should also be over. And it's not over. And that is a declaration that gives them the audacity to do all the crazy stuff that they've been doing. And secondly, I do believe that the pandemic has been over for a long time. COVID is endemic. Endemic means we're going to have to learn to live with the, whatever it is that they released. So COVID right now is endemic. And I grew up in Africa and West Africa. I went to medical school in Nigeria. I'm from Cameroon originally. And I grew up in a malaria endemic zone. So I know what it means for a disease that is deadly to be endemic. This is one of the reasons that really got me taking care of patients is because when I heard that hydroxychloroquine was working, I basically started using the malaria dose on people. I grew up taking hydroxychloroquine, chloroquine, mefloquine, and all that stuff, camoquine, daraprim. We took it, call it Sunday medicine.
Sunday, right?
Yeah. Sunday medicine. And we took it for the prevention of malaria, which is the reason why I've never gotten sick. Because I've always been on hydroxychloroquine. Since this pandemic started, I take hydroxychloroquine 2 tablets once a week, my vitamins and everything. So many people have gotten sick. I've taken care of all kinds of patients. Patients sneeze on me. My family move in with me when they get sick. But I've never gotten sick because I understand. I have that mentality of COVID is endemic, and I take Sunday medicine. That's number one. The second mentality I have that has kept me safe is COVID is endemic, and there's no such thing as a regular cold. The reason why, if you look at all the data, the reason why West Africa and most of malaria endemic zones were spared from this craziness is the mindset of every fever is malaria. You go and get malaria medicine first before. Mm-hmm. If you take malaria medicine and it doesn't work, then you start looking for what next can be causing the fever. For that reason, when most people got sick, maybe in Cameroon, Nigeria, Ghana, whatever, they go over the counter and they buy malaria medicine, which is one of the quinolones, the camoquine, mefloquine, and they are all effective towards COVID. So if they had COVID and they took malaria medicine, they knocked it up immediately. And that is the same reason why in the beginning, when people left Wuhan, China, all over the world, many of them got to Nigeria, but it did not sit West Africa. COVID did not sit into West Africa because when they left Wuhan, they were all required to take malaria prophylaxis to head to Nigeria or Cameroon or any of those places. And those malaria prophylaxis knocked out the COVID disease.
So, I want to share something with you because you're so on the money here and so few people are aware of what you're saying. So in March of 2020, when the outbreak was just beginning, China had already published on CGTN, on the Chinese television station there that speaks in English, that they found that antimalarials were effective. And I have it on I have a TV clip of a guy on TV in China saying that doctors are finding that antimalarials are effective at treating COVID. And you wonder, well, why did that become a conspiracy theory in the United States when it was being found to be effective? Pardon?
COVID-19 was a Trojan horse for the vaccine. And the vaccine is a Trojan horse for transhumanism.
I want to hear about those three.
Let me
share some other observations with you that are consistent with what you just shared, and I don't think the audience is aware of this. Nigeria has over 220 million people. It's the most populated country in Africa. It has fewer than 5,000 people that have died from COVID, which is meaning Nigeria has fewer COVID deaths than Rhode Island. Nigeria has fewer COVID deaths than Delaware. With 220 million people. Right. Now, Ethiopia All right, hang on. Ethiopia.
John.
What was that, doctor?
Well, I want to hear from, I want to sell ahead of response.
200 and something million people are packed like sardines. You cannot social distance in the slums of Ajegunle or Lagos.
Hmm. Right. And then you have
Did
Ethiopia.
Did they wear masks? Did they wear masks at all?
Yeah,
Stella,
sure.
In Nigeria?
Yeah. Very, they
in
have
the
much better
yeah.
masks than we do. Yeah, it's the masks, Greg. It's the masks. Nigeria has very good masks. Now, in Ethiopia, they have 120 million people. And Ethiopia has fewer people dead than Connecticut. And that's the second most populated country in Africa. Well, there's a common thread here, because when we go to Asia, countries in Asia also take Sunday medicine. Because mm-hmm. in Cambodia and Thailand and Vietnam, there's a lot of rice fields, and the rice fields are muddy, and there's a lot of mosquitoes. And so malaria is also endemic in Southeast Asia. And I spent 8 years living in Southeast Asia. And so I was looking at Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos. And in March and April of 2020, when we were declaring a global pandemic, there was no one dead in Vietnam. No one. Zero. And there was no one dead in Cambodia. And there was no one through the region, or it was a handful, like there were three people or six people dead in Thailand. So with that dynamic, it occurred to me that these antimalarials might be preventing COVID. And I started to share that information with people back in March of 2020.
I'm going to hold it just a little bit. I want to hold just a little bit, John, because I want to hold you up just a little bit because I want to get Dr. Emmanuel's take on these things here. And I love your numbers, and it's a great presentation. I want to hold up, but I want to get we haven't had Dr. Emmanuel on the show before, so there's a couple of things I want to talk about with her.
This is the global view. So this is.
Oh, I know. And then I
want to
get her view,
what
and then I want to
Dr. Emmanuel
sort of move on.
Sharing with you. Okay. Yeah, this is what Dr. Emmanuel's sharing, and I'm confirming it across a broader set of countries, right? So what she just said about Nigeria is true in Ethiopia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, because of the same drug, right? So the same medicine used in the same way led to the same outcomes in more than just Africa.
So let's ask the big question. I want to jump in here real quickly. Stella, so we know this. We know these drugs work. So, and you mentioned some things that you just dropped a huge bombshell I want to follow up on. COVID-19, the vaccines, the Trojan horse, you know, for transhumanism. So I want to kind of pursue that a little bit here. John, just my apologies to you. But what's so critical about this is that they knew this. We call Dr. Fauci Dr. Fascist around here, and I think for very good reason. So you can feel free to speak freely on this show. You can say anything you want, so you're not going to be restricted in that way. But it seems to me that the vaccine was created before the virus, that this was, as you say, a Trojan horse, that they knew about this. There's no reason. I mean, Dr. Fascist back in 2005, Judy told us about this. That there was a paper that he published or made comments that SARS-CoV-1 was treatable with hydroxychloroquine. So we know he knew. Mm-hmm. We know that everybody in the health department knew. We knew that hydroxychloroquine cured COVID. I knew from the Dr. Didier Raoult study in Marseille, France, back in February of 2020. So now the big question is we know they knew. So why? What is the diabolical nature behind these people? Why were they so hell-bent on suppressing the information, of restricting the doctors, of taking folks like you and Dr. Gold and the whole America's Frontline Doctors, and Judy and Brian Artis and Jim Thorpe and all these people, the same thing, restricting it so they could push this remdesivir ventilator death march and this stupid thing that's not a vaccine, it's an experimental drug. Can you kind of walk us through that? What do you think is really behind all this? I think that's probably the biggest thing we can cover now.
The truth about it is, like I said, if you read my book, Let America Live, you can get a copy on my website, drstellamd.com. Mm-hmm. If you read my book, it actually outlines I'm a minister of the gospel and a doctor, and I know from the spiritual level what's going on. When I started in March and April and telling people this is not science, this is a spiritual battle, this is a battle to take out humanity, people thought I was crazy and a little intense. But I told the doctors over and over, you guys wake up, this is not science. because mm-hmm. from then we've had articles after articles, we've had data, we have scientists, we have doctors, and what have they done? They basically suppressed all that and plowed ahead to approve this crazy jab for children, even our babies. So the bottom, children don't get COVID. I was a trained pediatrician. I'm a trained pediatrician before I started working in the emergency room. Children don't get COVID. We will see parents that can't breathe and then the children are jumping around. Or they get COVID and they don't get sick. You know, they don't get sick that way. So there will be no, there is no excuse or no reason to give children a vaccine. But I'm just saying that if people, if humanity can wake up and realize that this, what is going on is a global, is a conspiracy, but it's not a theory. It's a global conspiracy by certain elites to move humanity into transhumanism and population control. You can listen to Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, even the late Prince of Wales said when he dies, he wanted to come back as a virus so they can depopulate the world. So they have a crazy agenda to depopulate the world and then turn everybody to a controllable robot. And this is no longer a conspiracy theory because they are talking about it now. If you listen to Klaus Schwab said, in the fourth industrial revolution, it's not going to be you that, it's not what you do that will be changed. It will be you if you take gene editing. If you listen to Bill Gates said, if you want that, you can reduce the population of the world by 10 to 15% with good vaccines and reproductive health. You listen to the CEO of Moderna, that they are hacking the software of life and introducing a code.
Yep.
If you listen to,
2017, I remember that. I wanted to ask you about that too. Yeah.
Yes.
It's the arrogance of these people.
If you listen to Yuval Harari Noah, the Israeli historian that seemed to be guru or the prophet that is all these people listen to, he is the one that keeps giving. And I tell everybody listening, just go Google Yuval Harari Noah up in Rumble, rumble.com, and you see so much stuff that the guy is saying. They want to turn us into a robot, Internet of Bodies. You can Google Internet of Bodies. They want to download our brains and upload it. Humanity needs to wake up worldwide. There has been a worldwide conspiracy. All nations are involved. There are nations that do not have three COVID cases that were locked down and their economies destroyed. People's businesses, everything. Nigeria barely had COVID. They locked down the country, destroyed people's businesses, just destroyed. So what people can do destructive, children in masks, getting them psychologically crazy, blocking them out of school, and with no care, putting people in the hospital. You go to the hospital with COVID, and they tell you, go home and wait till you're almost dead. And then you come back, and then they intubate you, give you a remdesivir, intubate you, and kill you off. There were people calling me from hospitals. You know, I've been in this, and my heart just breaks. People call me from hospital. Dr. Stella, come and get me out of the hospital. And we couldn't. There was nothing to do. People begging for remdesivir, for ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. This country has a law called right to try. So anybody has the right to try any dangerous medications if they want to. We had people begging for medications. Many family members saw their family members the last time the day they walked into the emergency room. So right now, we might be sitting down thinking, well, COVID, Biden is saying COVID is over. I don't know what's wrong with him. But COVID is endemic. And right now, we're seeing an uptick with the winter. So my advice to all American people is make sure you have hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin in your medicine cabinet. Take it, prevention. If you have a cold, if you have a sniffle, if you have allergies, take two pills of hydroxychloroquine or one pill or whatever is your by your weight. Or ivermectin, so that you're safe. Don't sit down and wait till you get sick and you're in the hospital and then you're calling for people to come and get you out of the hospital. Our hospitals have become death camps and more have died in the hospital than needed to. The people who would have recovered from this thing at home, they will end up in the hospital and family members died. I travel around this country and people come to me crying. People come to me just saying, Dr. Stella, I wish I had met you. I wish I had known you. And then people come crying, those that we saved. I'm talking about 80-year-olds with diabetes and obesity and high blood pressure that would have had no hope of surviving this craziness. And we have people that live, 74-year-olds with diabetes, people with high blood pressure, immune disorders, and we gave them hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, they live. Yes, as you said earlier, The article that made me start using hydroxychloroquine, initially we heard they were using it in China. But what made me start using it was that article in 2005 that was written under Anthony Fauci that said chloroquine was a potent inhibitor of SARS-CoV-1. That is the article that made me start using hydroxychloroquine. And with all the attacks and the craziness that I went through, one of the things that we did, we hunkered down and we saw the American people. I do two things. I'm a physician and a clinician. We see patients, and the second thing that we do is we pray for this nation, and we pray for humanity, and humanity needs to stand up. So my advice to everybody right now, go to your physician. If they refuse to give you hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, go on our website, drstellamd.com. We get a doctor's appointment. We have doctors in all 50 states, pharmacies in all 50 states that will get the medicine right to your house. Get it in your medicine cabinet. Do not wait till you get sick. Do not wait till the winter is here. Because you don't know how crazy this thing is. We got to a stage where we'll call medicine to Walgreens. They will just cancel the prescription and not even tell the patient. People will be crying. We will call medicine. Sometimes my staff will spend time calling us into 4 or 5 different pharmacies before you find one that will agree to fill the prescription. So it became such a crazy thing for us. So we reached out to all the mom and pop pharmacies in America, and a lot of them stood up, and we created a system where our mom and pop pharmacies are there to take care of the American people. This is a war. But I tell everyone that is fighting the war, the patriots, those that are awake, do not sit down and wait to your secret. It doesn't make sense. You will not be able to fight a war when you can't breathe. So that's my stuff. I'm a clinician and I'm a pastor. I'm a clinician and a minister of the gospel. We pray for the nation and we advise people how to be safe through this craziness. We even got stuff for monkeypox and everything. So please just wake up. Wake up, humanity, not just America. I do shows and podcasts all over the world. People just need to wake up and realize there's a conspiracy here to destroy this very fabric of human beings and change who we are created by God. That is the conspiracy. And because of that, they stopped everything that could have treated people. First of all, we all know about gain-of-function studies and Dr. Fauci in Wuhan, China. So they put together this, they took a virus that was a common cold and made it deadly. And then they pushed it all over the world, and then they blocked the medications, and then they blocked everybody that could tell people how to stay well. This is a conspiracy against humanity, and it is this. They've not stopped. Yes, I know in 2020 when the Lord used my voice to shout to the whole world that people should wake up, COVID can be treated. It was God was just giving humanity a respite. It was just the mercy of God. Because that day at the Supreme Court was the day the dam broke. And when the dam broke, try as they may, they could not put the water back in. Everybody came running out of their houses. Everybody came running out of everywhere. There was hope. There was healing. There was the fear that had covered the whole globe. The whole globe was covered in fear. And God, in his mercy, used my voice that day to break that fear all over the world. God just showed the world mercy. Because if not by now, we're all probably going to be jabbed or still all locked down. Everybody need to know that these people, they are not, I would love to go into, what their own composition and the reptilians and transhumans and Nephilims and everything, but I'm sure that's another conversation for another day. But remember that
you can come back anytime.
People that we're dealing with,
you're always welcome on the show, so drop in.
These people that are
right
doing
now,
this
so,
are yeah. wickedly wicked. They are wicked. They are bent on destroying humanity, and we need to stop any romantic notion in our head that think that, oh, they have some kind of soul that can, or any kind of restraint that can stop them from going forward with their deadly agenda. They have not stopped. Just like with climate change, if they truly believe that climate change was real, most of them will not be flying private jets all over the world. They don't believe this climate change stuff that they're saying. It is just another way to block Europe, make people die, that people are going to die in Europe. This winter is going to be horrible in Europe because there's no gas coming into Europe. The Russian war is just part of their conspiracy, taunting Russia with Ukraine. It's just so much that, and it's these guys, they are evil to the core, and there is no stopping them in trying to depopulate the world and then corrupt the rest of humanity. get us into transhumans, which they can control.
Actually, I've got some ideas for how to stop them, but I'll go into that in a little bit. I want to check in with Judy Mikovits and Josie, who's on the line, too. And then I got a couple of questions for you. This is fabulous. I'm so glad to have you on the show. Judy, do you have some any comments, questions or comments for Stella?
Yeah. Hi, Stella. I'm just so blessed by you. And, yeah, that day you stood on the steps there of the Supreme Court was the day I just cried tears of joy. Thank you, God, for bringing me you. And, you know, we learned on the high wire a few weeks ago when people were begging on their deathbed for ivermectin, if they took it and went off protocol, nobody would pay for their care. They'd lose their life insurance. They'd lose their homes. You know, so that was where my daughter-in-law was, begging for ivermectin for cancer. They put a blowtorch on with the masks and the shots, and she could do nothing else except die because her kids were going to get no mother and have no place to live, would be homeless. That's how they, you know, worse than that. We have the right to try. I told the oncologist, please, please, please. And he said, she can leave my hospital, you know, but then she's off protocol. She has to pay the hundreds of thousands of dollars back for the year of their chemotherapy poison. It was horrible. So thank you for everything you're doing. And we're going to, you know, we're going to stop this. These kids who have no mothers or no fathers or no grandfathers, this has to stop. And we're going after them for premeditated murder. Thanks so much, Stella, for everything you continue to do and all those sources of ivermectin. Heed her warning. Get this stuff on your shelf. Don't wait till it's too late. We get 3 or 4 calls a day, especially with the myocarditis, and everybody's doing all this test. We don't know what's causing it, you know. Get them out of there. That shot's causing it, and the shedding's causing it. Don't go near the death camp. They're calling the hospital. Thanks so much, dear.
You're welcome.
Stella?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, do you have a comment? Because then I got Josie, and I got several questions myself. We also have extended time, so the beauty of Blog Talk is we can go past the top of the hour if you all want to stick around and chat.
Right.
John, did you have a question? Yeah.
Yeah, there's something I need to share with Dr. Stella.
Okay.
Dr. Stella, I spoke to a gentleman a week or two ago named Curtis Bay, whose wife passed away in the hospital after 2 weeks. She never tested positive for COVID, yet her lips were indicating hypoxia. She was 79% blood ox, but never tested positive for COVID. For the last 6 months in the United States, more people have died from influenza, PNI, than from COVID for 6 months. Every week, I'm looking at the PNI deaths from influenza mortality. The influenza strain that's killing people isn't in the PCR test, doctor.
Yeah,
there's two pandemics. There's two pandemics. Mm-hmm. I have 1 million PNI deaths since October 2019. And for the last 6 months, influenza has killed more people every week in the United States than COVID.
And if you have the data, are most of these people vaccinated?
Whether or not, again, irregardless of vaccination state, for the past 6 months, more people are dying from a different virus altogether. Now, if I told you it was tuberculosis, you might be taken aback. I'm telling you there's a strain of influenza that is not being detected by the PCR tests. Because there are people showing up at the hospital that are not testing positive for COVID, yet they are hypoxic. Now, how does that happen?
One of the things that we do within our protocol of treatment, the PCR test is a sham. It actually doesn't mean anything. One of the things that we never use the PCR test or positive PCR test to treat patients. We always treat patients by symptoms. Symptomatology, and that's always the way we've always done it. So,
what about cultures? What about cultures? Do we stop doing cultures?
We didn't do any cultures. Why would I go do a viral culture? That is not even something you do as a clinician. Maybe in some laboratory or some tertiary hospital, yeah. But we don't
do. That's the secret.
You know,
all right, you just hit on the modus operandi here. If you look at the data, there were two pandemics. One of them went undetected. The way it goes undetected is very simple. A, the strain is not in the PCR test. And B, you just said, we don't really do viral cultures anymore. We don't do that. Mm-hmm. We don't do viral cultures. That's the modus operandi. That's how you hide an influenza outbreak. You don't put the strain in the PCR test, number one. And number two, no one is doing viral cultures anymore.
We should give you a little background on this, too, because John's been talking about this for a while, and has briefed a couple of folks. We had Emerald Robinson from Lindell TV. But what John's discovered, and he's the numbers master, is that when he talks about two pandemics, is that there was like one we know about, COVID, which isn't, as we know, that deadly for 99.95% of the population. But the second pandemic, the hidden one, and this is why, John, you might want to give just a little bit of background on that, because this might be new to you, okay? So what John's discovered, he's got the charts to prove it, that the real death of the 4,000 a week, the number that he quotes a lot, that behind all this, the reason people are dying is a flu strain, and I'll let him explain it, but this is where this is coming from. But I wanted to give you a little bit of background so you kind of get caught up here, that along with COVID, there was this second, far more deadly virus. So John, I'll let you pick it up from here. Yes. And again, Stella, this might be new to you. Judy, feel free to join in as well. And then, of course, you'll see, I'll get to you in a little bit too. John, back to your story.
So everything that you've said so far, Dr. Stella, I agree with. All right, maybe not the lizard people stuff, but we'll talk about that another time. But everything you talked about with the vaccines and they've been planning it, you know, I'm with you 100%. But you have to kind of scratch your head a little bit and say, so wait a second. All of this was for what? To do what? What was the outcome? What were they hoping to achieve here? And at the end of the day, you are one of the few people who knows that there's, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people dead in Nigeria, a handful in Ethiopia, and that it wasn't that deadly, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, in other places, and that the way we count in the United States is absurd because we count motorcycle accidents and gunshot victims if they test positive. So it's ridiculous. So we've got 1 million COVID deaths. Now the question is, if there was an influenza outbreak in the United States, why would Dr. Fauci not tell everybody about that? Why wouldn't he simply say, hey, go to your doctor, there's two things running around, get tested, because you might need oseltamivir, you know, Tamiflu or Xofluza or Relenza, and a different course of medication.
Actually, hydroxychloroquine works.
It does.
Hydroxychloroquine works, too. On the flu.
Yes, as does ivermectin.
Hold on,
John. It turns out ivermectin and hydroxy are both very effective.
They're both effective against coronaviruses.
Yes, and
against
I think that this is... Yes.
The flu is
and
a
I'm talking about influenza. But I'm talking about
one
influenza.
One at a time, folks. Don't make sure we get one at a time. Let's go back and forth a little bit here. I know you're excited.
No, there's no question that the hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin are effective. I'm not debating that. What I'm suggesting is prior to the arrival of SARS-CoV-2, there was already a pandemic underway in Australia, in South Africa, and in Chile, and it was an influenza pandemic. They had the worst outbreak of influenza in the summer of 2019 that they've had in 100 years, and it was called influenza. Then in January of 2019, 4,000 people a week are dying in the United States of influenza, PNI. You know PNI, right? You know they've been lumping them together, right? ICD-10 codes, right? So they lump influenza and pneumonia together. They call it PNI. 4,000 people a week are dying before anybody's dying of COVID.
Did you see that in your clinic? Let me see. So did you see that in your clinic?
January, February, March.
Arise of influenza.
January, February, March of 2020.
Yeah.
We did not. Okay, this is one of the reasons why we don't even see an uptick like that in my clinic, because we have a lot of patients that have allergies, and we treat them the same way that we treat patients with asthma. If they're coming and they have bad allergies, we give them a steroid shot. Sometimes we give them breathing treatment, and we put them on Kenalog, and that actually dealt with the inflammation. So even the way we treated flu was the only thing we probably added was the hydroxychloroquine. So we didn't really have that many people getting that sick because of the way we've always treated flu and, you know, influenza-like illnesses. But this is what I would say, that which is one of the things that had probably been hidden from us in the medical field, in the medical community, is that the flu can actually be treated by hydroxychloroquine. Because hydroxychloroquine works against coronaviruses. It is very effective, and the flu is a coronavirus. Most of the common colds, till today, when people get a cold, that's why I say people have to change this mentality of, maybe this is just my allergies, or maybe this is just my cold, or my that. First of all, quit calling it yours.
Well, I'm being specific. I'm not talking about colds or RSVs right now. I'm talking about a specific virus. I'm saying H1N1.
I would not have. See, I'm a clinician. I'm not in a tertiary hospital doing research. I'm a clinician. So I do. Mm-hmm. I take care of patients based on what we see. You know what I'm saying? And all through, we did not even put any much credence to the PCR test. The only time we did a PCR test is if a patient insisted. We treated patients based on symptoms. And because we treated patients based on symptomatology, we basically caught the spread of whatever viruses were going on. We did not wait for somebody to have a COVID positive.
You reduced susceptibility. Yeah, your patients for allergies were less susceptible to getting any type of severe infection. And if they got infected, they would probably be asymptomatic because they already were not that susceptible to the severe inflammation and the cytokine storm and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But
do you know what? Go ahead, John, because I want to change subjects a little bit here. Yeah.
Well, I was going to suggest to Dr. Stella that the reason that, you know, again, we have two pandemics. This isn't a theory. This is CDC data. Now, why would Dr. Fauci want to cover up an influenza pandemic?
That's where I want to go.
They want people to die.
Hold on, John.
Hang on.
Okay. All right.
I know they want people to die. I'm being specific. I'm saying, why would Fauci hide an influenza pandemic unless
you tell me.
The strain came from next door to where Dr. Judy used to work at Walter Reed? If it's a strain that came from one of his laboratories that he funded, everybody on the planet would see it in GenBank and say, hey, that's Taubenberger's strain. Remember when they resurrected the H1N1 from 1918?
Uh-huh.
The one that causes severe cytokine storms and blue lips and altitude sickness.
Uh-huh.
Looks like altitude. In fact, they called it the Blue Death back then. Well, they resurrected that virus. Now, if that virus got out, don't you think Dr. Fauci would ask Peter Daszak to find something that presents similarly that we can release in China so we can blame China? China doesn't have 30,000 people dead right now. Beijing today,
Hang on, John. I know you're passionate about this. I really do, but I really want to get a few more things. Like I say, with the time we have available, Stella, do you have beyond the top of the hour, or do you have to leave at the top of the hour?
Let me see. I could probably be for a little bit before I leave.
Okay, all right, that's good. What are some combined reports here
about the 1918 influenza? What are your thoughts on that?
The 1918 influenza.
Well, Dr. Fauci resurrected it. Dr. Fauci resurrected it.
Okay.
All right, hold on.
This is. I do believe you, but this is what I'm saying, right? The whole, if we put this, the mindset that the whole pandemic was to hide something that slipped out of Dr. Fauci's lab might be making it a very simplistic view of exactly what is going on.
What is going on?
Whether it's going to be the flu, whether it's going to be COVID, whether it's they're going to weaponize monkeypox or Ebola or Marburg, and I'm thinking
Hold on, John.
The death behind this is transhumanism and the depopulation of the world.
That's what I want to focus on. John, I'm going to hold you up just for a little bit here. I really want to talk about this, like I say, in the time available. I'm going to get Judy and Josie in this as well, because this is the part, and we've had Patrick Woods on the show, and so we're the audience, you know, we're fairly familiar with how this works. But I had a question. It seems like the United States and Western Europe were targeted because they didn't do this in the African nations. They didn't do it in Asia, but they targeted – you know, the countries, the Western, you know, republics, the freer countries, Australia, England, Europe, Western Europe, the United States. Why do you think, do you have a theory as to why that happened? If this is transhumanism, do you go after the freest people first in the nation?
Yes.
You know, like,
because they are going to be, yeah, because like, especially America, because America is like a beacon of light and hope and people that are going to fight for freedoms. And they figure that, you know, let's bring down these Western nations so that before we target, we really go after the ones that are already down, you know. But like I said, this is a global battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the global battle, I met one of my doctor friends, you know, met him the other day, and I was like, I was smiling. I said, guys, I told you guys in 2020 that this stuff is spiritual. They're trying to destroy humanity and transhumanism. And we get sometimes into the complicated science. When I recognized that this was not science, I kind of stopped wasting my energy on the complicated science and just focused my energy on making sure that people wake up to the spiritual nature of what we're dealing with and be there and available to treat the American people. So sometimes, you know, I don't get caught up with, you know, the itty-bitty of the strains and whatever, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin works, whether it's flu, whether it's you know, COVID and everything.
Well, that's the
and
fascinating
so,
part.
As a clinician.
Did they count on that? Did they count on that happening? I mean, the Dr. Fascists of the world, did they think that the hydroxychloroquine was going to cure all these things?
That's
obviously
why they
not.
Came after us with a vengeance, because all of a sudden, something was going to stop their diabolic, you know, death plan. You know, that's why they came after us with such vengeance. Because they were like, even N-acetylcysteine, They started finding a way to block N-acetylcysteine because it's very good. N-acetylcysteine is really it's a mucolytic, and it's also an antioxidant, and really really helps with SARS-CoV-1 with SARS or with any kind of respiratory virus. So when we started treating patients and we put them on hydroxychloroquine, we put them on N-acetylcysteine, and we put them on, you know, something. So then the whole system or the FDA started trying to ban N-acetylcysteine from being over-the-counter. So anything that could help people, they tried to destroy. But I say this all the time. When COVID hit India, they almost killed all Indians. But the Indian government was smart enough to turn to ivermectin, and the pandemic was stopped in its tracks. I always tell people, you cannot social distance in the slums of Bombay or Calcutta or Lagos or Ajegunle. And if social distancing and masks was what was stopping the spread of this disease, these countries could have been wiped out. But they did not get wiped out because they took anti-malaria.
So what happened in our country that these like countries like India and the African nations, you know, they had hydroxychloroquine, they're willing to do this, but we listened to these health Nazis, as I call them, the Dr. Fascists of the world, and Trump got completely co-opted, and he was on the right track with hydroxychloroquine. He was talking to my friend, Dr. Zelenko, who's been on the show a couple of times before he passed away. He actually wrote a bill, which I'll tell you about in a little bit, to reform the FDA. Mm-hmm. What happened to our nation? Why were they so willing to listen to these people who were obviously wrong, because the rest of the world seemed to be doing fine? What happened here? How did the health Nazis take over the Trump administration?
The first thing about it, at that time, Trump was more focused on winning the election than he was upon doing the right thing. Number two, there are many people in his orbit that were not telling him the truth. Even Dr. Burks came out right now to write a book about they gave Trump the wrong advice. At that time, the media was so brutal. That is why they came after me with such brutality. I've been through what it means to be under that level of media brutality. Because when they came after me crazy like that, I remember times when Hannity and everybody had me coming on their show, but because of the way the media came after me, they backed down. Because everybody is terrified of to receive the wrath of the media. So many people stopped it. And then they had the WHO acting like a shadow government in treating, now they have the pandemic treaty. They didn't have it in place at that time. But in the background, it was them with people that had a lot of money incentivizing hospitals to do these death protocols. So sometimes people put this down to Big Pharma wants money. I don't think that this is about Big Pharma wants money. It's about a diabolic cabal. Because when push comes to shove, there are many doctors that would have stood up in hospital and screamed if it was just about Big Pharma and money, because people's lives were involved. But doctors were being threatened, jobs were being threatened, and those that were put in place as CEOs in these hospitals were all part of the plan. And this was in many countries. So in many, many countries, you have young doctors that are seeing data coming from all over places and seeing other doctors talking about it, wanting to treat patients. And then you have some major CEO or some major director in the hospital that's the one that decides the protocol, stopping them from seeing patients. And boards started threatening doctors. Many people were scared. I always tell doctors, I said, the medical community, we are the ones that let the American people down. Because the doctors started thinking more of their cushiony whitewashed sepulchres, I call big, beautiful houses. And that was more important to them than doing the right thing. Till today, doctors were terrified to lose their license. Doctors were terrified to lose their cushiony jobs. Doctors were frightened. And when CNN came after me and boards started threatening me, it only went more to say, oh, Dr. Stella, we don't want to be like Dr. Stella. We don't want CNN to come after us. We don't want the board to be threatening our jobs. But you know what? I call them the good Germans that stood by and watched Hitler take the people to the guillotines, and they look out through their window and they did not say anything.
Mm-hmm.
History will judge them.
No, you're absolutely right.
And the world will judge them.
Yeah. And we thought it could never happen again. And to me, I call this a medical holocaust. I've said that before, you know, and I openly say Dr. Fascist because I believe that that's what's really going on here. What kind of world do you think they're trying to create? And then I want to tell you about our legislation last little bit. And if we have some overtime, I can open up more. But why do they think the world's going to be a better place if it's depopulated? Is it just so they can control us? I mean, who do they think is going to work in their factories and, you know, and do all the things that people do and all the blue collar jobs and the service jobs and all the things that people do to keep our society going? Why do they think it's going to be better if we're 10% of our population now?
They don't think they're going to need us. In fact, Yuval Harari, Noah said, they're going to have machines working in humans. They're going to create bodies that are going to carry AIs, and these bodies are going to work in factories and everything. And in fact, humans, they're not going to have any need for human beings. So they're just going to give us drugs and video games.
Hmm. Matrix and the Terminator.
Yeah, like the Matrix, exactly. Just like the Matrix. In fact, there was a doctor that did a lecture at West Point, Dr. Charles Morgan, and that is what he's saying, that they are teaching people things while they sleep. They are programming things into people's minds. Then it's just going to be like the Matrix, that people can learn how to move. They can have you can see just like the Matrix. You know what I'm saying? If you listen to Dr. Amy Cruz, she used to work for DARPA. Right now, she works for the Platypus Institute. She said they want transhumanism, that the human brain is archaic. They need to upgrade us to human 2.0 and connect us to the Internet of Things and connect us to the Internet of Bodies. Yuval Harari Noah says this, that at some point we're going to have these tiny nanobots swimming inside our bodies that will replace our immune system. And you're not going to be able to survive in this world without being plugged in, just like the Matrix. You know what I'm saying? If you're not plugged in, you're not going to be able to survive, because everything else will be destroyed. And these people are serious about this. That is why when you see some of these crazy Hollywood movies, you need to look at it properly.
It's fascinating that Hollywood supports the underdog in movies and then supports the government in real life. It's fascinating. Go ahead, Jesse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jesse?
Thank you, Dr. Stella, for coming. I was hoping you did. And absolutely correct. All these movies that they've been showing us through all these years, that's exactly what they are doing. And they're showing it in our faces, but we're not getting it. We think it's a movie. But the population control, it starts in the womb of the woman, and they want abortions. They're vaccinating our children with poison since you're born, if you have a chance to get born. So this has been going on and on. All the medicines that they give us are contaminated. All the products we're using are contaminated by China. So the list goes on and on and on. And they're trying to kill us since we're born, if we get a chance to be here. It is sad, and it's time to kill him. This killing of the vaccine of innocent children. I know so many people, they're collapsing with heart attacks, strokes, and it's been going on now for 2 years, and it's continuing. But God bless you, and I'm glad you came to the show, Dr. Stella. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, you know, one thing that people that I'm saying is that right now, almost everybody knows somebody that dropped dead. Do you know how many people have to be dropping dead for most people you know, knowing somebody that dropped dead after the vaccine? And they are not reporting these numbers. I'm sure all of you know somebody that
dropped
dead.
One of my reporters.
Oh, yeah.
One of our, Dr. Peter Pry, who's a national security expert, he reported with us for 4 years, and he died 6 months after a COVID shot.
Do you know how many people need to be dying? How many people are dying? Insurance companies that did insurance from age 18 to 45, and they barely charge them because that age group don't die. They are going into bankruptcy. Morticians are reporting. Embalming people are reporting. So there is what we call right now a massive death, and the commonest cause of death is being reported right now as we don't know. Cancers that had been in remissions are coming back raging. Diseases that have been in remissions are coming, because basically what they have created is an HIV-like condition in people, where people's immunities have been destroyed. And it's such a kill shot, because when you now die from a stroke 6 months later, you don't relate it to the disease. Or if you die from a heart attack, or you die from pulmonary embolism, when this blood clots happen in your heart, you don't relate it to this disease. When your immunity is destroyed like they did with HIV, you die from little things that couldn't, did not have to kill you. So they have created such a diabolic kill shot, and they can sit back and just watch humanity die. I am a Bible scholar. If you go in Revelation 6 and you read it, it talks about seals that are opened and released on the world. The first seal was the conqueror, and the whole world has been conquered. The second seal is war and disagreement among each other. The third seal is famine. I tell people listening to me right now, Google food shortage and make sure you stock up food, water, and everything for your family. Learn to grow your own vegetables, because famine is coming. It's going to be worldwide, and it is deliberate, just like the pandemic is deliberate. When you look at the fourth seal, it's death and hell, and many people are going to die. By the time you get to the fifth seal, you see many people at the throne of grace. I tell people that have not given their life to Christ, give your life to Christ. Make sure if you die, you go to the right place, because one quarter of humanity is going to die. If people are not seeking God right now and still have all these ideas of who God is and, oh, they can do it by themselves, when they get to the place where people are going to be dropping dead on the streets and you'll be seeing dead bodies and nobody can bury them because there will be so many, humanity will rise up and humanity will seek after God. But for now, people can continue their science ideas and everything. But I'm saying, if you don't listen right now and get ready for what is coming, you're going to be caught up without knowing. Stock up food, stock up water, stock up medication. If you're on diabetic medication or high blood pressure medication, stock it up. Because when famine really hits and everything is crazy and a loaf of bread is $300-$400, how are you going to feed your family? You can go to the stores right now and see what's going on. Google food shortage. It is time for humanity to be prepared, because you can't fight this battle when you can't breathe, or you can't fight this battle when you don't have food to eat. So stock up food, stock up water. Go on our website, drstellamd.com. Get ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine in all 50 states, or go to your doctor or whoever. Just get it.
get your vitamins, get your medicines that you need, stock up Band-Aid, stock up, pray for the mosquito, just about anything. Because it, get flashlights and little solar power banks and little solar generators that you could just, please, be prepared. If the grid goes down, what are you going to do? We even have a nebulizer that you can use. You can plug it on a USB cord. Get small, just please stock up. I found a heater that is a 200-watt heater on Amazon. Just please, humanity, listen to me. Get prepared because we are about to go into an Armageddon-like life, and things are going to get really, really crazy. And if you are not ready, you will be destroyed.
We heard exactly the same thing from Wendy, who's does our Oh My God report. She's a minister, and it's fascinating, the parallels. You're saying exactly the same things. I want to get Judy's opinion on the destruction of our immune system. But before that, there is a way that hopefully as we work through this incredible thing is happening. There's something that I started here at Action Radio. So we're the first show with a citizen legislature. We actually write bills that can be put directly into Congress, directly in the committee hearing. They can go to the state legislatures. They can go to local governments. And there's two bills I want to tell you about. This is why I've been trying to get you on for about 2 years now. It's taken a while, so I'm really glad you're here. But Judy knows about this bill. Josie knows about it. It's a bill that will put full product liability on vaccine makers. And it's at writeyourlaws.com. That's our website. I'll text it to you so you'll see it. And WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And that's where you have that bill, product liability, full product liability. And if you start talking about it, and I want to get Simone Gold on the show, she's an attorney. She'll know all about this. You know, and if we can get you guys, every time you go on a show, say, here's the problem, and you outline the problem, but here's a solution. There is a bill. If you could just copy the link and send it to Congress and send it to every media outlet and send it to all your friends and family and ask them to do that, we get this bill link. This link to our bill on vaccine product liability, it basically says there's a few things in it. It gets rid of the emergency declaration. But the main thing that it does is it takes the places in law, and there's two of them, where it says vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable. And it takes out the word not. So it says vaccine manufacturers shall be liable. Now, if you can help push this, if you can help advocate this bill and get it to all the places that you go, Judy's already doing this. Josie does this. I mean, we're working towards this. That's the first bill. The second bill, which is really key, is it fixes Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This is what big tech uses to suppress us. So what I do is I take one section that tells them the things they can remove from the Internet, which includes anything they think is otherwise objectionable, all right? And those powers are already covered by the obscenity law, so they don't need to do that. They don't need law enforcement powers. So what my bill does on big tech, it says you retain your immunity from anything that anybody posts. You're not liable for what people post, okay? But if you touch what anybody posts, if you touch anybody's account, if you touch their messages, comments, if you touch anything anybody's doing on social media, or if you arrange the search results on a search engine beyond the raw number of hits, if you manipulate the data in any way to change the results on a search, if you do that or mess with accounts or mess with social media, you lose that immunity. You are then liable, and then you can be sued by anybody. You know, if you touch anybody's account, if you touch anything post, and if you touch the search engine, you lose your immunity from liability, and you can be sued. And that's how we control big tech. So those two bills, those are the two big ones right now. And we've got them on writeyourlaws.com. I'll text them to you. You can take a look, see what you think. And hopefully we can get America's frontline doctors lobbying both our end to big tech and our product liability bill, vaccine product liability. That's what we do here. What do you think?
Yeah, send it to me and I'll do what I can.
Okay. Appreciate it. Judy? Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Do you have any questions? That was a lot, and it's a lot of new information.
No questions, but once again, just
go ahead, Judy.
Echoing everything Dr. Stella says, absolutely everything. You've got to get clean food. It's going to get ugly. No, there's no destruction of our immune systems if we just stop poisoning them. While there's breath, there's life. This is a spiritual battle, and the mark of the beast is not your arm. It's your brain. You've got to know God has everything you need. God is love. God wins. Love wins. That's what we have to do. You know, we are here for you, but you have to believe us and wake up, as Dr. Stella just said.
Okay. I'm done. I said my bit. Anybody else? Josie,
can I say, I was talking to one of the ladies at church last night when I was at at the Bible study with Estella. And she goes, no, I'm not preparing. She goes, because God is going to provide day by day. I said, really? Is that what he did with Joseph? Joseph told them that they needed to prepare for 7 years of famine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of like did not answer me back about that. But I got her because, you know, we have to be prepared. We have to be wise mm-hmm. because God give us the wisdom for us to obey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying last night to all the people at church, Dr. Stella, we have to prepare with everything, especially meds. Hydrochloride, mm-hmm. ivermectin, we should have it in our home. Everybody should have
yep.
it in the home at this time.
Yep. In your medicine cabinet.
Be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like I tell okay. people, we have spent the past two years taking care of the American people. That's just what we do. We've seen over 120,000 patients. We've kept many, many people alive. It's been an amazing, amazing thing that the Lord has just been gracious and given me the grace and ability to do with all my team. And we're going to continue taking care of the American people. That's all. That's like I said, I do two things. I'm a clinician and I'm a prayer warrior. Those are the two things that I do. And that's the services that God has put in me to give to humanity. So everybody, just please go to your doctor, get hydroxychloroquine. That is the most important advice you can get for this winter. Get hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin in your medicine cabinet. That will save your life. It will save a family member. These medicines are over-the-counter. I don't care. Go across Mexico and get it. Fly to India or wherever. But if you can't find it, if you go on our website, drstellamd.com, we can help you to give you a prescription. Keep it in your medicine cabinet. It will save you. It will save a family member. And remember, there's no such thing as a regular cold as we go into this winter. Any sniffle is to be dealt with hydroxychloroquine precisely.
Hmm. Wow, that sounds fascinating. I have to talk at myself here. So this has been wonderful. Anything? Do you have any questions for us, Stella? Anything that we can help you with, or for Judy or Jesse or me?
Yeah, I just think you everybody just let's just continue the fight, and
okay.
just continue the fight. And I pray that God will strengthen every one of us. And continue mm-hmm. to give us the grace to do the work that we do. You know,
yeah.
that's my prayer that every one of us will be strong.
Is any news media covering you? I would think this would have been celebrated. This is the other thing I don't understand. The entire news media has been co-opted. Not one of them have said, this works. This is an early treatment. The government's wrong. You know, and they never do it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we all know this. I mean, the shows like mine and Del Bigtree and other folks that are doing this, you know, and it's just getting the word out. It's almost like we're like two separate worlds. There's the freedom world and
yes.
there's the government
world.
Yes,
there's actually two separate worlds.
Okay.
I feel sorry for Democrats because Democrats seem to be in this bubble. You know,
mm-hmm.
they are the ones that are like deep in the matrix, you know. But at least Republicans are waking up. So let's continue to pray for our family members that they will wake up.
Yeah. Do you see, when people come in, do you see a lot of them, there's a lot of fear in people from the mass psychosis, they're buying into all the bad information?
Oh, yeah.
Still coming
no,
to you?
Right now.
Okay, go ahead.
I live in Texas. Initially, the fear was crazy. We were all afraid. We started out wearing Tyvek suits and masks and just covering our whole body and very picking at the patient through some goggles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in Texas, and Texas was pretty free very early, you know. But the mask thing, I always say that slaves who love their masks shall remain in their bondage. It is really sad to still see a few people out on the street jogging with a mask or see a three-year-old with a mask. It just hurts.
Yeah.
But most people have been run away from the mask, you know.
Do you find people
but
are healthier
you see that
when they have less
they
fear?
Monkeypox,
yeah, go ahead.
Many people ran back into the house and put on their mask again. So we pray that people yes. We pray
Do
that
you see
people
monkeypox
here?
Have you had any monkeypox cases?
No, I haven't. But being that we're always forward-looking, we found a pitcher plant. This is a carnivorous plant that was used by the Indians in the day of smallpox to treat smallpox, and it treats all pox. So we actually found a doctor, Dr. Jaya, that is it's a naturopathic doctor to produce produce pitcher plant for us, so that we have it in case you people. We have it on our website to pox defense, in case you get exposed to the monkeypox. I do believe that they're going to use monkeypox. They're going to weaponize it more. They're waiting after the election. Now they're just calming down onto the election. After the election, they'll probably weaponize that because that will be the best thing to use for a digital currency, where you don't touch anything because you can touch monkeypox.
Oh, jeez.
You know, so, yeah,
fear.
So,
fear kills, doesn't it? People die of fear.
Yeah, I'll advise people go online, look for pitcher plant or Sarracenia purpura. I think you can see it on, I think it's on Amazon. Just get it and keep it in your medicine cabinet. We have it, we call Pox Defense. But the one we have has other immune things in it. But if you just want the pure Sarracenia purpura, you can actually get it on Amazon or something before it runs out. Get it, keep it in your medicine cabinet. If they weaponize Pox and you get exposed, you put 3 sprays in your mouth for 5 days and you'll be okay.
Pitcher
plant. Build your immunity.
I wonder, yep, Judy, have you heard this before? This is new to me.
Yes, Sarracenia purpura.
Dr. Jana Schmidt. Yeah.
Yes,
and we've also got that in our healthy store. Yep. She's done
a
lot of studies. She's an expert.
Not even that. There's actually a study that was done under the NIH. If you Google pitcher plant and smallpox, there's a study that was done under NIH, just like the chloroquine study, that talked about pitcher plant, Sarracenia purpura being used for monkey for smallpox, not just pox, smallpox, all the poxes, chicken pox, smallpox,
right.
all the you know, all the viral viruses. So yeah, so people get your pitcher plant, keep it in your house.
About it. Yeah, Zev Zelenko told us about it a year ago. We were looking for all of this, so we had the Pichia plant, and so we knew this from Native American and the Cherokee Indian.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've got this.
Mm-hmm. There are studies that have been on it, and people should just look at that. And like I said, let it be part of the things you get in your medicine cabinet. If you do we're also putting together what we call Viral Immune Plus. That has like echinacea, elderberry, ECGC, and other stuff. That we're putting that together in case they weaponize Marburg or Ebola. So, yeah, we're working. That's what we do.
Well, this is fascinating that you're working on these things ahead of time so that no matter what they try and throw at us, you know, it's like with the, even if they vaccinate the cattle and it's in the beef, you know, we have, you know, the things that you have to treat, you know, the vaccine injury. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
We really are becoming two worlds. I don't give up hope. I think we're going to win because there's always a group that comes along that wants to take over the world, whether it's Stalin or Hitler or Mao, or you go back to Genghis Khan, or you go back to an entire human history. There's always some idiot or group of idiots that think they can take over the world. And it hasn't worked. I don't think it's going to work this time either.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all together now, and we have the internet, and we have different ways to fight this. And so I'm fighting with legislation.
Yeah.
You guys are fighting it with the clinical Dr. Stella with the clinical stuff, Judy with you know, with everything she's doing with you know, molecular biological teaching of all the doctors. I mean, it's fascinating what happens. And Josie does what she does best, you know, which is you know, work with the folks that she works with. And it's just fascinating how this is working. But we're all coming together. We all started in different places. You know, I started back in February 27th of 2020. I wrote a bill for Congress. It never went anywhere, but I wrote a bill that said that that Congress could only spend half the money on vaccines. The other half had to be spent on early treatments because I recognized right away you don't bring a vaccine to a disease that's already here, especially when it takes 10 years to develop one. So that never made sense to me. So here, I'm not a doctor. I'm looking at this logically. You know, we have the logic and reason filter here. I'm saying to myself, there's no way this can work. And who's this guy, you know, Fauci? He's saying that, and the only thing he's saying is vaccines. He never mentioned cures. He never mentioned treatments. He never mentioned anything. I always like to ask the question that isn't being asked. Excuse me. So I knew something was wrong right away. And then we just, then when I announced on March 2nd, 2020, that chloroquine kills COVID from the DDRL study, that was it. We were censored right away. That's when I became one of you guys. So just as the last thing, like I say, I'll send you the bills. I'd love to get you and Simone Gold or maybe Dr. Gold by yourself. But if we can get America's frontline doctors as legislative advocates for just these two bills, you know, then I think that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, let me know. I'll connect you if you don't have the connection, Dr. Gold. We were in Miami last week with the Surgeon General of Miami, yes. And he was
Well, I'll text you with my number. And like I said, all numbers are kept confidential. So that's good. And then I'll get you the bills, and I'll give you websites, and we can talk, and emails, and we can do things that way. But this is fabulous. You are wonderful. Where's my round of applause here real quickly? So let me just get that. hang on. I'm not scrolling fast enough. I even announced it ahead of time. Here we go. So Dr. Stella Emanuel, thanks for coming on the show and welcome to Action Radio. Now you're part of the family, so you can drop in anytime.
Sir.
Just if you want on the show, if you have an announcement, if we can talk legislation, do like a legislative workshop on all that.
Yes.
Judy's working on a couple bills now. She's going to do, we've got the bill to ban drug advertising, and we're going to, well, here's just one last question real quick. There's no legal requirement to see a doctor that's licensed by any of these boards or things like that. So we can actually boycott the quote officially certified, you know, doctors that are following the government line and just go to independent people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a good
can.
One. That's a good
like
one.
Okay. One of the things that the PrEP Act really did was that it gives doctors the ability. This is what I tell a lot of physicians. They don't know that. But with the PrEP Act in place, you can see patients in all 50 states with just one license.
We need to get the
I mean,
PrEP
I'm
Act,
like
10
states.
Yeah, we need to get rid of the PrEP Act, too. Go ahead. Someone's dropping.
No, I'm saying that right. I'm licensed in 10 states, and I have people that are licensed in all 50 states. But with the PrEP Act in place, we can take advantage of that PrEP Act. You can see, as long as it concerns the pandemic, you can see patients in all 50 states.
So is the PrEP Act a good thing or a bad thing? Should we get rid of it or should we keep it?
No. I'm saying that, no, I mean, if either way, it's not a good or bad issue that I'm talking about. I'm saying that, right?
Okay.
If
right.
They put the PrEP Act together to protect themselves from all kind of craziness. But that same protection gives the good doctors can also use the same PrEP Act to see patients in all 50 states. So there's no restriction. If like I had one of the states come after me because we had seen a patient in that state, they're like, oh, you're not licensed here. And I sent them a very strongly worded email. I said, listen, the PrEP Act, the federal act trumps any state legislation.
Why don't you write that bill? Would you be interested in writing it? And I'll help you write it and we'll work on it. And that might be a great bill for you. And then you can advocate it directly with America's Frontline Doctors. You'd be a citizen legislator. We'll add that to the long list of credentials. How's that sound?
Okay.
You can be a bill writer.
All right, let's
ask Judy's a bill writer. Yeah. It's fun, isn't it, Judy? Josie writes bills, too.
we'll look into that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Let's call a halt here. This has been great. This has been wonderful. Thank you all very much. So once again, Dr. Stella Emanuel, you're drstellaemanuel.com. Got that right?
No, drstellamd.com. drstellamd.com.
Okay, let's make sure I get that right. drstellamd.com. Okay, anybody else want to? Judy, you want to give your... I'm sorry, Stella, go ahead.
No, I said drstellamd.com.
There we go. It's on a podcast, so anybody that missed it that time, repeat it again. All right, so Judy, you want to give your website and any email or anything like that?
Yeah, drjudy.com and the drjudy at therealdrjudy.com.
Got it. And Jesse, you want to plug your store real quick? Anything you want to say?
Of course. I'm driving. Of course, it's going to be loud. Ruth Uniform Shop on Isle of Road, Pensacola. Come and visit me. We're the information center.
Yes, all the doctors and nurses and people that need uniforms come to her store, so she knows everything.
I hear all the stories.
Yeah. All right, all. Let me just play a couple things talking about Action Radio. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's the early day, 6 a.m. Central. And so we have our gun reporters. We have our financial report. We have our constitution reporter. And we're going to talk climate change with an earth science teacher of many, many years. And so that starts 6 a.m. Central. And again, all the folks on the show today, you're always welcome to come back. This is an unusual place. We are literally one big happy family. So take care, and I'll see you all tomorrow. And remember, our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.